Wendy, could you do the show open? I'm finishing up my bowl of dirt that I eat every morning.
See there?
Well, I'm letting my dog lick me, so.
Oh, everybody's happy.
May I start the show with apologizing to everybody I've pocket called today?
Are you on a streak today?
Can I just tell you, our producer Kevin has the day off.
Yes.
Joey Gelman filling in. Thank you, Joey.
He has a couple weeks off. He's getting married tomorrow and then on a long, long honeymoon around the world.
Right. But, you know, these are the pre-wedding days off. The wedding's tomorrow. He's off today. And guess who? Pocket called him at 6:30 this morning.
Would that be you?
No.
Good for you. And how did he answer that?
He didn't answer. Because
no?
Once I, you know, when you up... I updated my iPhone to the new EOS, as you call it.
Yeah, the EOS system.
The iOS 10.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you have to close off your screen or anytime you touch it, it will just call people. And I had to get up at 5 this morning to get Dylan to his junior high because they're going on their annual Springfield trip.
Uh-huh.
So he had to be there early. So I was up early. And I pocket called Jim at about 5:15, my husband, and then I thought I put the phone away, but at 6:30, I just heard it ringing, and I looked down, and it said Kevin Richter, and I'm like, oh, crap.
You called him.
But I hung up right away, and he didn't answer, so hopefully he was sleeping.
Now, you know you call me a couple of times a week that way.
You brought this up yesterday, and I had figured out a way to never pocket call anyone again, but since the new update, I'm having issues with
it. Uh-huh.
So sorry if I called you. I called you at 6:30 last week.
Yeah, it's easier for me because I rarely have
you
the phone with me.
You see it after the fact. Thank God it's not a real emergency.
Oh, do you? Is the phone in your pocket at 6:30 in the morning?
It can't be, can it?
Well, I got up at 5, so yeah, I was probably, you know, doing some pre-show prep, and then when I went to put it in my pocket to go make coffee. That's when it accidentally called.
But even
Kevin.
With the system changeover, I get these calls from you all the time. It's been going
on
for months.
No, it hasn't been recently. I've been pretty good about not pocket calling.
It's not as often. I still get them, but it's not as often. But I get more of those from you than everybody on my phone put together.
I know, and I apologize for that.
That's all right. I don't get it till the next day.
Fine.
Dirt may be the answer. You heard what Steve said in the news. Doctors are suggesting you stop eating regular food and just eat dirt if you're a kid.
Oh, that's not quite it, but they were talking about that bacterial soap and we scrub too much.
That's right, and that's why there are peanut allergies.
Oh, I wonder. That might have something to do with it.
Did you know anybody when we were growing up who was allergic to nuts?
Not a single person.
Me neither.
But now there's a bunch. When I was growing up, there was a girl in our neighborhood. Sharon Brooks was her name. I wouldn't say that on the air, but that's her name, Sharon Brooks. And she would, she was younger than us. And one of our neighbors, the Skiles family, had a sandbox, like a top-notch killer sandbox, a big, like a professional-grade sandbox. And Sharon, while we were all building things with sand, would just keep eating the sand. And we would say to her, you should not eat sand. But it didn't faze her. She would eat the sand. And then other times, sometimes she'd put a plate like of dirt or mud, and she would just sit there and eat dirt and mud. She thought it was hysterical. And we were kids. We were like, well, you can't do that. But as long as you're doing it, let's watch and see what the results are. We would watch. But I don't know if that has good lasting effects on a child.
She hasn't been ill in 32 years.
No, she's as healthy as could be.
Well, there is a condition where people eat things because evidently their body's not producing enough of it. So they do eat strange things like metal and things like that.
Right.
But you know when you're at the beach and you go swimming and you accidentally get a grain of sand in your ice cream? It is the worst feeling in the world, like just the grinding. How could she... Oh.
She would sit there with like a plastic spoon like you would get from isn't that weird?
You know, that would linger too, right? Because you're going to have little pockets where the sand's going to hang out all day and then come back.
Yes.
And just grind against your teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, we all made mud pies, but none of us ate them.
No, you just make them.
Until they were frosted.
Right then, they're delicious.
So you made me think of something, Wendy, with that biting... Remember when we were younger, it was not unusual to have little, Rosanna Dana called them toenails, but there would be little bits of bone or whatever in our hamburgers.
That still happens every once in a while.
It does? I haven't noticed that in 15, 20 years.
Every once in a while, and it really ruins, it's like when you get an awesome omelet and all of a sudden you take a bite and you're down to like the end of it and there's a crunch because an eggshell got in it. I know it happens.
Right.
Same thing with a burger. Every once in a while and sausage on sausage pizza because they grind the meat.
So it's a chip of
bone.
Although, but Steve, your name for it makes it makes a bad situation even worse. You know that.
What was you, the what chip of bone?
No, didn't you call it a toenail or something?
A toenail. She, yeah, Roseanne, Rosanna Dana did a routine.
Oh, it was her?
You get a little tiny toenail.
I thought it was a little tiny sweat ball on the tip of your nose. I never heard the toenail one.
Mr. Richard Fetter from Fort Lee, New Jersey writes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want that stuff in your food. That's not going to make for a pleasant meal.
Evidently, your friend from the
Sharon
neighborhood.
Sharon Brooks. Wouldn't say her name on the air, but it is Sharon Brooks. She would. It was like a regular thing.
She doing it just to mess with you guys?
I don't know why she was doing it. She came from a larger family, so maybe food was at a premium at the house. Maybe there wasn't enough food to go around. But, yeah, I don't remember a time we ever played in the Skyle sandbox that Sharon wouldn't sit in the corner just spooning herself some sand, loving every bite. Like one bite would make you gasp,
yeah.
Right? You go, oh, this isn't to be eaten. But she would just sit there very casually and eat it. And Dan Skiles would say, hey, we're going to run out of sand. He wasn't concerned about her. He didn't want to run out of sand.
You mentioned a great sandbox. What consists of a great sandbox? Because I'll tell you, I had a pretty damn good sandbox.
Listen to this. It was big enough for 8 kids to play in it comfortably. Not just in it, but near it. Like, we would build mountains and roadways and stuff through the mountain.
That's pretty big.
And it was covered. It had a canopy on top.
So did mine. And you could screw it down so it would cover it at the end of night so cats couldn't go use it as a litter box.
That's not bad. That's
my grandfather made it.
That's a nice sandbox.
That is the same sandbox that I was tied to when we lived across the street from a park, and I kept going away without asking. Just going to the park. I mean, really, yell my name and come home. But my mom decided to teach me a lesson and tied me to the sandbox. And the kids behind us had 6 or 7 kids, and they, oh, Wendy, what are you doing? My mom tied me to the sandbox.
That's terrible.
I did.
That's awful.
You know, I was going to say I learned my lesson and never ran to the park again, but
Didn't work. Now, the parks by me now all have this surface. Like, if you were to fall off one of the, like, the slide or, you know, the monkey bar thing that's shaped like a half sphere, if you fell off that now, you would just bounce up in the air and you'd be fine.
It's all rubber.
It was cement. All we had was hard cement.
I know, and we all skinned our knees.
I remember.
And we were tougher then.
We were a tougher grade of kid. But I remember there were ambulances at the park I grew up at very regularly.
Ambulances?
Yeah, some kid would take a header from the top. You know that thing that is? It's a half circle. And at the very top of it, at the apex, it's got to be about 5.5 feet high, right?
And you stand
up.
You'd
climb up it, and you'd hopefully get to the top. Some kid was always falling through that and breaking their head on the cement.
We were evidently more coordinated in Brookfield.
I guess so.
Because I never saw an ambulance there.
Oh, man. All the time.
And, you know, it would be terrible because you'd go teeter-totter with somebody and they thought it would be really funny if when you're up in the air, they would get off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You would go flying.
Right.
But no ambulances.
Wow.
We just brushed ourselves off, got the little right. dust off of us and said, who's next?
Now, Sharon Brooks would have eaten that dust. You should have called
my
friend.
Dust.
You should have called Sharon Brooks. All right, we've got a bunch of people on hold. If you want to talk to us, stay there. We're at 312-981-7200. We'll get to calls and texts next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. I was almost sure Joey would bump in with either Nitty Gritty Dirt Band or Muddy Waters. He opted not to. Nothing wrong with that.
We got to help.
Nothing wrong with that. We're talking about a survey that says that it's now good for kids. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I guess this is real because it was in the news.
I believe it.
It's not the worst thing in the world if you're a kid to be eating dirt and mud. It's actually good for you, but no thanks.
It's not very tasty. Hey, Bert.
Right.
Hey.
Did you find mud to be tasty?
No, it was horrible. But when we were little kids, I used to eat, you know, we used to take the little tinfoils from the pot pies.
Yeah.
We used to make mud pies.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And we would eat them.
But you're not supposed to eat them. You're supposed to just make them and admire your handiwork. You're not actually supposed to eat them.
No, we used to eat them. And I just want to tell you, and I'm probably going to be sorry for saying this, but I never get sick. I'm almost 60, and I hardly ever get a cold, and I don't have anything major with me, problems, or
wow.
And I'm sure I'm going to have something wrong now. But
No, you're fine.
That. But there is a lot of truth to that.
I never get sick. Yeah, so I don't have any allergies, nothing like that.
Well, that kind of goes along with the survey that Steve read in the news, so there's something to it. Well, good for you, Bert.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. Have a mud pie for dessert. I have a major announcement, and I was preparing for it since last night, and I just missed it.
What's your major announcement?
Well, major announcement. Happy autumnal equinox. It arrived precisely at 10:21 today, about 2 minutes ago.
Oh,
I missed it.
Oh, we just missed it.
Autumnal equinox, September 22nd at 10:21 Eastern time. So what's that?
You have to do the math.
Eastern is ahead of us.
Right, so it's 9:21 our time.
Oh, crap.
You really missed it.
I stink.
This has been a special announcement. A special report.
There are two equinoxes annually, the vernal
right,
and the autumnal.
Vernal and autumnal, of course, the names of Elvis's parents. Did you know that? That's his mom and dad's names.
I know it was Vernon. What was his mom's name?
Equinox.
Oh, that's so... No, autumnal.
Autumnal was his mom.
It marks the beginning. It's the first day of fall.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for fall.
It's now upon us.
I missed it. An hour and 2 minutes ago.
Toast it with some dirt champagne with me.
All right.
Courtesy of Sharon Brooks, she sent over a case.
Do you want to know when... can I tell you a little about the autumnal equinox?
I would love to know about it.
It happens the moment the sun crosses the celestial equator, which is an imaginary line in the sky that corresponds to Earth's equator.
That's how I spent high school.
From here on,
college.
The days get shorter until the winter solstice, which is in December, when the light will begin its slow climb back to long summer days.
Yes.
So
this is the beginning of
shorter days.
The sad season, as I like to refer to it.
You don't even like fall.
I do.
Crisp days, crunchy leaves.
It's been beautiful around here.
It has been sensational. It's been more summer feeling than fall feeling, to me anyway, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. The weather's been perfect.
But it gets nice and cool in the evening.
Isn't it awesome?
Right.
It's like awesome. Living in San Diego or something.
The part that gets to me is that I know that truly nice weather, the real stuff, won't happen again until June, and that's such a long ways away.
Really, and you can't count on June. I would say July.
July, right. Actually. And then it starts to get too hot.
It gets sticky.
Yeah, it's sticky and it's hot.
No.
So it's the end of nice weather as we know it.
Well,
enjoy.
September 25th, the sun will rise at 6:47 Eastern time and set at 6:47 p.m. Mm-hmm. So look at that. Rise at 6:47, set at 6:47 p.m. That day is known as the equinox.
The equinox.
Lux being Latin for light.
Light, yep, sure.
Very beautiful. Happy fall, everybody. Autumnal.
You are autumnal. When does daylight saving time change? When do the clocks change?
It used to be, because they changed it, remember?
Yeah.
It's November now.
Yes.
Oh, is it November?
Because here, our anniversary is October 25th, and the night of our wedding, we got to set the clocks back.
Yeah.
And had to pay an extra hour at the hall.
Oh. Oh.
If we wanted to stay. So it was always our anniversary weekend that we got an extra hour of fun.
Yeah. It was a little too dangerous for the trick-or-treaters. I think they decided they extended it.
Is that what it is?
Well, I think that was one of the reasons.
Yes.
And they just decided, they extended it on either end.
That's what I'm getting to. Can I talk?
Steve, go
geez.
Ahead.
So they switched it several years ago to 1 week later, I believe, as Steve mentioned, to correspond with the little trick-or-treaters.
Well, that was worth the wait, Wendy. Thank you.
Well, good for all of you fall
fans. So that's
fans.
Coming up.
It's coming
first week
up
in
fast.
November.
All right. Well, thank you. That's been a special report. Now back
spring
to our regular
ahead,
programming.
Spring ahead, fall behind. So extra hour of sleep. Awesome.
Yep.
All right. An extra hour of news. That won't be happening, but we'll get to news next.
Is it possible to take Crystal very, very quickly? Because I'm very curious as to how this could be.
Hi, Crystal.
Hi. When my youngest son was someplace between 2 and 3, he was talking. So someplace in that area, I took our older son into his brother was a couple years older. So I took him into one of those big stalls, bathroom stalls, Target, you know, the one that you can. Okay. So I'm in there helping out my older son and I turn around just in time to see my younger son lick the stall door.
Oh no, 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 no. There's
didn't
no
you
germs
have any,
there.
Didn't you have any mud to give him before you went to Target?
Well, that was it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Okay, he didn't eat mud, but, yeah, he licked the stall door. And I'm like, why would you do that? And he says, I thought it would be tasty.
And was it?
My older son at the time was going through this whole germaphobe thing.
Yeah.
Like, making us all wash our hands. And he's like, oh my gosh, we have to take him to the hospital. And I said, like, what are they going to do? Like, spray his tongue with Lysol? There's nothing they can do. I figured he just built up some good antibodies that day. And I got to tell you, the kid is rarely sick.
Is that true?
And he's 16 now.
That's amazing. That's a miracle.
I think if you can lick the stall door in a Target, you can do just about anything.
Well said. Well, thank you, Crystal. I appreciate that.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I know Slam to Target. They keep their bathrooms clean. Those red stall doors are very clean.
But as clean as they keep it.
It's a bathroom.
You wouldn't.
Right.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that at my own house, much less.
Stalls at your house?
Yeah, we put stalls in.
No
it's
waiting.
Better. It's better. No waiting this way. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more show, including the anniversary of a film that means a lot to all of us. And the director behind that film, John McNaughton, will explain more in just a little bit. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, 30 years ago, kind of one of those groundbreaking films came out. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, which is, if you haven't seen it, well, stop it. Go watch it. You need to see it.
But you need to prepare to see it.
Oh, yeah.
It is. The writer, director, John McNaughton in the studio with us. Wouldn't that be safe to say you need to prepare to watch this masterpiece?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's not going to be like anything else you've seen.
No, really. Nothing.
And it's pretty shocking.
It is loosely based. Tell us about the real Henry.
It's loosely based on a man named Henry Lee Lucas, who is, again, I've been a true crime aficionado my whole life. I grew up in the South Side, so crime was, I was surrounded by it. And so at any rate, when I was doing the research for this, the term serial killer, I'd never heard it before. It was new. The FBI coined the term, I found out years later, about two or three years before Henry, about two or three years before I first saw the term. And Henry was one of the early, there have been serial killers, but one of the first ones to catch the name. And he had a partner named Otis, O-T-T-I-S, Elwood Toole. And they traveled with a young woman named Becky, who was, I think, Otis's cousin, perhaps.
But we know him better from the movie as Otis, correct?
Well, we changed it to Otis because just Otis was awkward.
Yeah, sure.
And
you don't want to make anyone uncomfortable.
Good point, Bill. So this was made in 1986, but it didn't come out right away. Explain that.
Well, I don't think the owners were terribly impressed with it when they first saw. They, I went to, as I often say, I didn't go to film school. I went to art school. And I always, wanted to be an artist. So it was, to me, it was a work of art. And although it's classified as horror, I consider it to be a film about human beings that do horrific things, but it's not what I call ooga booga horror.
It's not a horror.
It's stark realism, and it more comes out of American social realism as much as it comes out of horror film genre.
But, John, the comparisons have been made to Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, and you can certainly draw those parallels. But in that film, much like your film, it's a character study about a very disturbed human being. So it's not horror in the traditional way. It's not your Frankenstein or Dracula, but it's an inner horror.
Yeah, to me, there's nothing more horrific. I mean, again, I love traditional sort of horror, ooga booga horror movies.
Yeah.
But, when you walk out of the theater, there's no, you walk out of the theater when you see Henry, and he I know a lot of people that were looking for him. Because to me, there's nothing more horrific than what human beings are capable of. And what's inside of us, our darker regions, which there's no escape from, whereas there's always an escape from Freddy.
Yeah.
As much as I like Freddy.
Yeah. Freddie Fender, you're referring to, right, the singer?
The last
two. Stop that.
I saw a great interview with Freddie Fender one time. It was really cool. Right. But anyway.
So Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, it is the 30th anniversary in January. Or was? When is the actual anniversary? I just know that you have a big event coming up next month.
Yeah, it would be 31 years ago right now that Richard Fire and I were writing it. And Hollywood and Lakeshore, where he was living in a building over there. I just drove by it the other day because I had to go to Northwestern for an interview. But it would be 30 years ago that right about now that we completed it. Worked most of my career with an editor named Elena Maganini, who used to work for Sinnott and Associates, an animation house not too far from here, and we cut it at her apartment right over by Oz Park.
Really?
And that was finished, I think, probably around 30 years ago in the late summer.
For those of us who have seen the movie, John, it doesn't leave you soon. The movie kind of lingers for days, weeks, sometimes months or years. As you're making this, was it hard to sleep? Because it's just so edgy. Was it tough to survive in the world while you were making this?
No, because it's make-believe when you're doing, even though it's the scene, you know, the key scene, the home invasion, as it's called.
Yeah.
I will say we shot two takes of that, and there was really almost no crew. And that was Waleed Ali's new house. He had just bought that house. So he was going to redo it, so it didn't matter if we made a mess.
Yeah. Which,
but when we shot the second take, I just turned to the few people that were there. There was the actors, the guy with the bag over his head. He was our PA.
Oh, he was? Yeah.
Yeah, and the kid that comes in and gets murdered, the woman that just dropped me off, my longtime assistant, that was her little boy who's now a grown man.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of friends were working in that picture.
Sure.
But I just turned to those assembled and I said, none of us are going to heaven after shooting this.
And all local artists? And how'd you hook up with Michael Rooker? Because he, of course, plays Henry and swimmingly, may I just say.
I will go take one step back from there. There's a man named Steve Jones, Stephen A. Jones, not the guy from the Sex Pistols.
Oh, right.
And Steve worked with Elena Maganini over at Sinnott & Associates. He was a director of animation. But he grew up in the Brooklyn Projects and came to Chicago to go to school at Illinois Institute of Technology. Steve was very young. Steve skipped 2 years of grammar school. Very smart guy. Mm-hmm. And came here and went to IIT. And it just so happened, and Steve was a musician, a drummer. But a lot of the guys I grew up with in Roseland, we all played in rock and roll bands. And on the periphery was James Young and Styx and that whole gang. Mm-hmm. We used to battle their band, Jay and the Catalinas,
at
111th Street YMCA. Yeah. So I've known JY since I was 16.
He was just on the show a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Known him since, really brilliant and really bright man. Anyway, he went to IIT. I think he has a degree in aeronautical engineering. Yeah. He's a really smart guy also. But a bunch of the guys that I went to Fenger High School, who were rock and rollers, a few of them went to IIT, and they all formed together, and Steve became friends with a bunch of my friends.
Yeah.
And so I got to know Steve through them and through music. And Steve was also affiliated with the Organic Theater. He used to do like technical stuff for them when they'd have projection and video and stuff like that. So he was friends with Stuart Gordon, head of the Organic Theater. And the number two guy over there was Richard Fire, who was creative director, whatever, and an actor and a writer. And Richard, the Organic Theater came apart at one point, and they all, you know, Stuart went off and did Reanimator, and the actors went and, you know, I mean, Dennis Farina was in that crew, Dennis Franz was in that crew, Joey Mantegna was in that group, and Richard Fire was one of them, and Tommy Tolles was one of them, and who would play Otis. So Steve,
Otis, my man, that's my Otis.
Steve was really hooked into the Chicago creative community more than I, so he came on board as a producer, and we've been working together since that day.
Wow, 30 years.
Yep. And so he introduced me to Richard Fire. And actually, and Richard Fire brought Tommy Tolles in as for Henry, but I didn't think he was right. I thought he was perfect for Otis, but not for Henry. And we were seeing a number of actors in the Chicago, out of the Chicago theater community for Henry, and we just didn't really find the person. We found someone we liked, but he was a little bit older, and he wasn't really sexy the way Michael was. And we thought, well, the relationship between he and Becky will have to be more of a father-daughter, more paternal than, romantic. And then we had two makeup artists. One guy, Jeff Siegel, did all the special effects makeup. And then we had Bernd Renscheff, who grew up in Germany, but he was our, you know, beauty, so to speak.
Right.
Makeup, and also our still photographer. And Jeff Siegel had worked in Chicago theater, and Jeff had worked with Rooker. And some play, I didn't see it, I don't remember, but, you know, we're looking, and Jeff suggested, you know, well, I know this guy. And Richard Fire was very dismissive of it. Because Richard,
was he?
Yeah. And he goes, cause he hadn't seen him. He was because he was really wired into Chicago theater and he didn't know Michael. So,
yeah.
And I just said, you know, to me, it's like, I'll see anybody. Yeah, send the guy over. Let's see, you know. So Richard and I were working up at his apartment at Hollywood, in a high rise at Hollywood and Sheridan. And we had made an appointment and there was a knock at the door. We used to work at this big old round table. That's where we were writing the script. There's a knock at the door. I knew it was Michael because he called up from downstairs, but I'd never laid eyes on him.
Yeah.
I didn't know what he looked like, what he was like. So I went to answer the door and I opened the door and there was Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
Basically, except for his shoes, we changed his shoes, but he was wearing that Carhartt jacket.
Really?
Those blue Dickie work pants. Yeah. The, you know, the whole, he was dressed.
You knew the minute you saw him.
I just opened
pretty
the door
much.
And I went, and I,
he's
said,
here.
I said a prayer.
It worked great. Stick around. John McNaughton is here. It's the 30th anniversary of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. We'll tell you how you can see it again. And if you haven't seen it again, you need to see it. It's
absolutely
a very, very important film. Stick around. More of us, Bill and Wendy, in just a minute. WGN.
All right, I know I joked in our promo that one of my favorite romantic comedies, Henry, mm-hmm. Portrait of a Serial Killer, we would be discussing today, mm-hmm. With writer and director John McNaughton. But it's not funny. There are parts of it. It's real life is what it is. And there are some horrific moments, as we've discussed. But Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, in my opinion, and yours probably, is a must-see movie.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it's the 30th anniversary of the film. It's been restored in 4K. It will be re-released nationwide by Dark Sky Films beginning October 21st. And is there going to be a premiere party for this?
I just thought about it this morning that there's going to be a premiere at the Chicago Film Festival on October 14th. I think it'll be, I forget what the designation is. They haven't published the time yet, but I think it'll be after 10 o'clock. It's,
it works better at that time.
Yeah. And so it's going to be a big red carpet event screening. And I think tickets go on sale like the 23rd, like in 2 days. So you can find it on the Chicago Film Festival website. But then it will be released in 20 markets, 20 cities on, I believe, the 21st. And then I'm going to New York. There's a premiere in New York on the 21st of October. And then there's a premiere in Los Angeles on the 28th of October. So they're, you know, they're doing it. And then it'll go back out on DVD and Blu-ray. And I don't know if digital platforms. I mean, it's not my end of it.
It really found its audience once it went to VHS and Beta,
yep.
back in the early days. That's where America or the world really found this movie and embraced it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. We have a listener, Kevin, who wants to talk to you. John McNaughton in the studio with us. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi. How are you? Spookiest movie ever because it was real.
Yeah.
But I lived in Colorado during the 80s, and I like delivered hardwood lumber. And when we got too much, we would hire day laborers. Well, we hired these two guys one day to deliver for us. And the reason I know is because we're waiting for them to come back, and they never came back. We called our customer. The customer paid COD in cash, and those two guys were in the wind. And the reason I know it was them is because that Henry Lou Lucas had that wandering eye, and the other guy was bald. So I get the shivers every time I think of those two guys because I was like 2 feet away from them. And then when all the stuff came out and what they did, man, it's pretty spooky when it's real life.
Yep. They were, like I say, I first saw them on an episode of 2020, and it was about that, you know, Henry Lee Lucas, serial killer. And he did. He had that eye. And I just, you know, he was very charming in his way. But I mean, growing up where I grew up, I have two great talents in life. One is sleeping, and the other one is spotting deranged people at a great distance. And I just have that instinct. I grew up around too many of them. And I just know that had I seen Henry from a block away, I would have crossed the street.
Really?
I mean, he had the look with that eye.
Kevin, thank you for calling. We appreciate that story. Glad you made it out of there alive.
Yeah, I know.
That would be freaky then to watch
the
movie.
So freaky. John, you made a film, Mad Dog and Glory, another great film. with two of, I think, our generation's most interesting actors, Robert De Niro and Bill Murray. Uma Thurman's in it too and does a great job, but those two guys are two really standout actors. What was that like?
That was really a great experience. I mean, you know, I got a call from a woman named Melanie Friesen, who at that time was Martin Scorsese's assistant. I used to have a loft on Milwaukee Avenue, and it's this phone rang. It's this John McNaughton. Yes. Hi, I'm Melanie Friesen. I work for Marty Scorsese. Okay. Well, I just saw your movie, and I really loved it, and I gave it to Martin Scorsese, and he really loves it, and he wants to talk to you. He has a project he wants to discuss, and it was like,
wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Will you be there in 10 minutes? It's like, oh, no, I'm going for an ice cream cone. You know? I'm going to Bobby in the bar. But so 10 minutes, it was Scorsese called, and, you know, he sent this script, Richard Price script, and I read it. It was a really great script. Richard's a great writer. So I was flown to New York. I went, I think, Bigsby and Crothers in those days, because people were expecting to see a drooling maniac when they, you know, nobody knew who I was. So I bought a brand new Armani suit. And I don't know how I afforded it in those days, but I credit card most likely, and showed up at Marty's office. And, you know, everybody, I mean, Martin Scorsese is incredibly funny, bright, brilliant, fast.
Yeah.
You know, and incredibly kind and generous to me. De Niro, same. Bill, the same. Uma, the same. It was great. The one bad thing was we're supposed to shoot in New York where it was written. And the IA, the craft union.
Yeah.
Went on strike in New York. Hmm. So we're scouting locations. So, it looks like they're going to settle. Oh, great. We're going to shoot. And then it was like, no, it fell apart. They're not settling. So where are we going to shoot? Well, we'll go to Chicago. So we kept getting jerked back and forth, Chicago, New York. And finally we had to go because we're going to lose the actors. So we brought it here and shot it here.
It worked.
Boy,
did it work.
I'm really a big fan of Wild Things.
Oh, yeah.
With Neve Campbell, yep. Kevin Bacon, Denise Richards.
Matt Dillon. And my buddy, Robert Wagner.
Yeah.
Andy Wagner.
Yeah.
Oh, we love him.
Yeah.
He was really a cool guy.
That's a great movie.
He had a crush on Wendy. We had him in studio, and he really had a major crush on Wendy.
Seriously. But congratulations, the 30th anniversary of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Of course, it made Time Magazine's and Roger Ebert's 10 best lists, numerous awards at film fests. It's really a masterpiece. It really is.
Thank you. I'll just make one comment. I saw, it was last year, 2 years ago at the Chicago Film Festival. I think I had the last film that Steve Jones and I made called The Harvest with another Chicagoan, Michael Shannon. And anyway, Chaz Ebert was there and was talking to Chaz Ebert and stuff. And she told a story that in their, her and Roger have, she still has, I believe, a home somewhere in Michigan on the lake, mm-hmm. Summer place, and they have a suit of armor in their foyer or wherever. I've not been there, but she said, "You know what the name of that suit of armor is?" What, right? Henry.
It is. What a nice tribute from a man who saw 100,000 movies that meant a lot to him. John, an honor to meet you. A pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything you do, and stop by anytime. We'd love to have you on anytime.
I live here. Part of the most of the time these days.
Well, you're always welcome.
Well,
you
come
really
and
are.
Tell us about your new projects, whatever you want. We're here for you.
All right,
we're big
cool.
fans.
That's John McNaughton, everybody. We'll take a quick break and then Steve with the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, there was a story. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. There was a story you did in the news that I'm a little bit curious about, and that would be the study that this doctor says we are hardwired to not work out, that it's human nature to just kind of conserve energy. Could that be possible?
That we have evolved to a state to where we don't really need to exercise as much as you might think. Yeah, that it's perfectly natural.
Who's this quack? I mean, doctor? Because it seems crazy.
Does it seem crazy to you?
Well, no, I'm all for it. But I mean, it just with the way everybody works out.
You would think that it would be
the
opposite.
Healthy.
Because, if you want to live longer, more longevity, that your key is being heart healthy and running and lifting
and
weights.
And limber and everything, because you need to live longer.
And I said to Steve off air, you weren't here for this, Wendy, but I said, my guess is that this doctor is flabby. Don't you think?
I don't know.
Just some job of the hut looking guy just went, hey, you know what?
Okay, so it's a human evolution expert, Daniel Lieberman.
Yeah.
He says our ancestors spent so much time hunting and so much time and energy on hunting and gathering that humans have evolved to conserve energy as much as possible and to naturally be lazy. And so technology also contributes to that. Those of us who are adept at technology don't have to move around as much as well. So she says, if you are one of these people who doesn't like to exercise, consider yourself not lazy, but evolved.
Well, I guess you could make the argument that now the way that life has become, none of us have to go out and hunt and fish. You can go to the Jewel, and whatever you were going to hunt and fish, they have it at the Jewel.
Tell Ted Nugent that.
So right. he chooses to use his own bow and arrow. But for many of us, it's just as easy to go to Mariano's and say, I'll just take this and this and this and then pay for it. So to that extent, I guess he's right. But, you know, I've brought this up before, and everybody gets mad at me. The laziness factor in the country is at an all-time high. People are just as lazy can be. And, you know, the example I always give is look at any escalator where 90% of the people get on it and just stand there.
I don't walk up on an escalator.
But you have a bad knee.
Yeah,
or
but
two.
I mean,
you have two bad knees.
But honestly, even when I was a kid, I didn't. I mean, that was an escalator. If I wanted to walk up it, I would take the stairs. So I don't know that that's being lazy. I think that's an escalator to make your ascent easier. So I didn't know to walk up them.
I'll use another example, similar but different. If you go to any airport, they have the moving sidewalks. And again, people get on it and then they're done. They just let
it's
the moving sidewalk.
It's a moving sidewalk. It moves for you. I do walk on those because it's fun.
I enjoy watching the people waiting to board their plane by...
Right.
lazily going down. It's like a lazy river that you stand on.
I know.
But it is it's a break. If it wasn't moving, they wouldn't have it. It would just...
But do people really need that break? You know, I go across the street. There's a building across the street, and there's a food court upstairs. And without a doubt, every day I go there, there's a line of people on the escalator because nobody will walk up it. And if I say, excuse me, I'm the bad guy all the time because I'm the one that's disrupting them... When in reality, it should be, if you're going to be a slug, stay to the right.
Well, that's not fair to say that.
It's accurate.
Not really.
Why?
Because it's a moving stairwell, so it moves for you.
But doesn't this prove my point that we are a lazy society? If that many people stand there with me today, when we go on break, stand there with me today and do the numbers, easily 90% of the people, they get on it, they're done walking.
And because it's an escalator. If it was a staircase, they couldn't just stand there because they wouldn't get upstairs, would they? And I stay to the right because people like you are whizzing past me. I hold my purse in because I have a big purse. And if they're trying to get by me on the left, I know it'll run into them. So I just stand there and I take the ride up.
But again,
and I'm not the only one.
But I give you get a pass because your knees are bad. You're on.
Well, even as a kid, it was a ride.
But doesn't this prove what I'm saying, that for the most part, we live in a society that's just lazy? You don't need that. Who needs that break that badly?
Well, why does that mean that you're lazy? I just think that you're
because it
slamming a bunch of people. They just choose
lazy
not
people.
To walk.
But it proves what I'm saying, doesn't it? How could you not describe that as lazy? That's the epitome of lazy. Just getting on an escalator,
listen to what
just
you're saying.
Standing
getting
there?
On a moving thing of stairs.
Right.
Why would you walk up it when it's moving for you?
You get there faster. You can do
Who's
more things.
Who's in such a hurry?
Me.
Well, go by on the left.
But
I'll leave you room.
You can't get by on the left. I'm telling you, every day I try to do that. If I say, excuse me, I get eye rolls and, oh, here comes somebody that wants to move up. You know, yeah, I want to get there faster. You don't count that as lazy. You don't see that
I
as lazy.
I think that's a blanket statement, and perhaps there's somebody who just had a kick-ass workout, and they feel like taking a little breather.
Come with me today during the break and tell me that those people just came from a kick-ass workout. They didn't.
What if they're shopping all day and they need a little break in between stores? I just think, you know, I don't think that means somebody's lazy. I think it means they're not walking up an escalator that is moving for them.
A.K.A. lazy.
Well, that's hurtful to people.
That's because you're lazy. You, by nature, are lazy. Would you admit that? You're a lazy person. True or false?
I guess. Well, I like to take a nap.
Then aren't you defending your own kind then? Aren't you kind of on the side of I'm lazy, everyone should be lazy?
My husband is not lazy. He works out 3 to 4 times a week. He will stay on the escalator with me. He doesn't walk up it.
All right. But I'm just saying.
Is he lazy?
I say anyone who gets on that thing and just stands there and doesn't let anyone through, that to me is lazy. That's the epitome of lazy. I don't know how you could be lazier than that.
You could lay down on it.
You could.
That would be lazier.
You could.
There's also something which is weird that Steve did this in the news, and I probably has something to do with it. But human lifespans last way beyond our normal reproductive years.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rarity in the animal kingdom because usually when an animal is not fertile anymore, they die pretty much. Mm. Recent research says there's a reason, and you will love this.
I'm ready.
I say sarcastically. Men who put on weight and experience a testosterone drop as they get older are more likely to continue to reproduce, and those lower testosterone levels make it easier to fight infections.
Mm-hmm.
Men who reproduce later in life then pass on the longevity genes,
no.
which could explain why we've ended up living so long.
I could see that. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
It does? See,
yeah.
I think you the more you take care of yourself and stay in shape and have your cholesterol be good, I would think that would increase your longevity.
It would play into it. It could not play into it. It would have to play into it, right?
I don't know. Did you text this lazy fat bastard's move?
I didn't. I thought it with my mind. Did it come out as a text? I can't believe it. It's so frustrating when you want to get up one of these escalators, and the one across the street from us is more than a story. It's like a two-story long escalator. So to get from the bottom of that to the top, it's impossible because people just don't want to move, and they look at you like you're crazy. I want to get to the top. That's my goal.
So you'd say the
this.
Majority of the people don't walk up it.
Oh, by far. It's
but
it's
yet
around 90%.
You're right and they're wrong.
Yeah, I know that. I know how crazy that sounds, but it's proving my point. You don't think that proves my point of laziness, that it's a lazy society?
I don't think an escalator proves laziness. I think people's lack of working out proves laziness.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
But to me, I don't think an escalator is a valid test, but you do,
right.
And that's all right.
All right.
We agree to disagree.
Let's take a break.
And take some calls on this, 312-981-7200.
Yeah.
Will you hit the button? I'm too lazy.
Okay.
Oops, I really did. I swear to God I hit it. I swear I hit it.
You
Nothing
took a
happened.
Nap. You didn't hit the button.
I will hit it again.
Try it. The Bears, by the way, the official NFL team of lazy. That's the only thing they lead the league in. The only thing.
Bill, you're your own worst enemy because everything turns to the Bears, and like, what a downer you are.
I know.
On it. Everything.
I know. You're right. You're absolutely right. I know that.
Kim, I got to ask you, do you walk up an escalator?
I do. What are my other options? Stairs or
no? Just to
take
stand
the
there.
Elevator. Oh, you mean just stand around?
Yeah.
No, I walk. I can't stand to stand.
All right.
You're my hero. Kim is my hero.
Because the texts are very mixed, but
okay,
you know, I'm like a
are.
Crazy workout person, so you can't go by me.
And Bill works out all the time too. So,
right.
But I just don't think if you don't walk up an escalator, that makes you lazy. Lack of exercise. Somebody texted being lazy is when you can't get out of your car to throw garbage out, so you just whip it out the window.
Don't you
that's
see that
lazy.
All the time? Yeah, and selfish.
Well, that's a totally true thing.
It is. And I know there's people on there who have either had some medical malady and they can't walk up the stairs, or if you're older, or if you're an infant.
We'll start interviewing people that are standing there. Say, what's your deal? Why are you standing there? Why are you not walking? And see what they say.
All right.
Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're good. How are you today?
I'm doing just great, too, and I really love listening to you guys.
Thank you, Phyllis.
And Bill, I usually love a lot of stuff you say, but you are dead wrong on this one.
So this means when you approach an escalator, you have it in your mind, as soon as I get on that thing, I'm just going to stand there. I'm not going to walk up.
Well, like Wendy, I have a bad knee as well.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
If it's medical,
yes,
you get
you
a pass.
Yes, you are saying that, but you don't know who you're looking at. You're looking at everybody and going, you don't have a bad knee. You don't have an excuse. You don't have a reason. You don't know what's in everybody's mind and what's going on with them.
So you think
so
when,
just kind of saying,
when it's yeah, between 8 and 9 people out of 10 not walking up an escalator, you're just saying that it's all medical problems?
I'm not saying it's all, but you do have older people, as you mentioned. You have people who have medical problems. You have, as Wendy mentioned earlier, you've got people, maybe they've just been doing something all day and they just need a 10-second break. You know, but you're just, I mean, you know, I work two jobs. I'm
mm-hmm.
not a lazy person.
Mm-hmm.
But I use the walking motion things at the airport. I use the escalators. I'm not lazy. I work, you know, like 60 hours a week practically.
All right. Well,
you can't call me lazy.
I applaud that. If you're putting in those kind of hours, and again, you have a medical reason for not walking up it, but I guarantee you, Phyllis, come with me. Stand there with me. Watch. You won't even have to move. You can just stand in one place. No,
but why is medical reason the only reason you will say somebody is not lazy?
Or age?
I just think if you don't, I just think that's a blanket statement. Like all people who don't walk up on an escalator are lazy. That's not necessarily true. I will tell you that the steps are way bigger than if you walked up the stairs.
Sure.
I get kind of.
That's why if an escalator's down, you have a hard time navigating
it. It is.
Yeah. The ratio's
exactly
off.
Right.
I get that.
I'm short also, by the way. And so walking up an escalator is harder than, you know, I don't know, Wendy, if you're tall or short, but as a short person, it is harder to walk up an escalator that's moving than just walking upstairs.
Plus, it, like, tricks my eye. Honest to God.
Oh,
right.
Because
of the lines, the vertical lines. Right.
Yeah.
All right, Phyllis, I know I want you to still like me, so the next time I see you, if there is an escalator, I will carry you up the escalator. Is that fair?
While he's walking.
What? Right.
While you're walking, very good.
Is that our deal? All right, we'll do that.
I love you guys.
Thank you, Phyllis. Thank you.
630 says, I work out every day. Hang on. Mm-hmm. Texts are coming in fast and furious. I work out every day, and I run marathons, but I stand on an escalator. If I wanted to walk up steps, I would take the stairs.
All right. That's a surprise. I'm shocked by that one.
That's what I mean. I don't know that that means they're lazy.
Right.
I'm telling you, to me, as a kid, and did you walk up it as a kid? I used to walk the opposite way to play around on them.
But then somebody from Penny's yells at you and says you can't do that.
How did you know it was,
always JCPenney's. I don't know.
It really was. All right, Jerry's on the line. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say I go to a health club.
Yes.
And there's an escalator to go up to the second floor where you work out.
Yeah.
And I say, just about everybody, well, I wouldn't say everybody, majority of the people take the escalator and they're going upstairs to work out.
To work out for an hour, but that extra 15 seconds would crush them.
Wow,
they don't want to walk up the stairs.
What health club has an escalator?
The one I go to does too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
We have stairs and an elevator.
Oh.
Yeah, I would say I have an elevator in a building I own. And surprise, I would say, I can't for sure, but I would say at least half the people take the stairs rather than take the elevator.
Sure.
They want to get the exercise.
Yeah, I get it. Well, thank you, Jerry. We appreciate it.
Okay. I'm glad they use the stairs. Let's work on my elevator.
Of course.
If you want a good workout, do the stairs instead of doing
it drains
treadmill.
You.
Big
it drains
time.
You.
All right. I don't know. It's, you know, to each his own. Just don't, if you see Bill coming, walk.
I'm getting a stun gun. I'm going to have a stun gun, and I'm just going to stand there with it.
Take people out.
Yeah. Yes. All right. We need to take a break. News is next. Kim has the news, and then a lot more show. Stay where you are. Oh, Dean Richards will be by in just a little bit. We'll talk to Dean. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You're amazing. You just stay in bed. You're lazy. Just stay in bed. You don't want no money. You don't want no bread.
It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Dean Richards. And Dean is just coming off of a very exciting interview. We saw you, Dean, on the Channel 9 News just moments ago. Can we talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, of course. We're at the National Puerto Rican Museum, which is on Division and right between Sacramento and Kedzie.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful in Humboldt Park. And this is where a gala is going to be taking place tonight, honoring Lin-Manuel Miranda,
mm-hmm.
the creator and star of Hamilton, Tony Award-winning star. You can throw in a Pulitzer Prize there if you want to, and a Grammy and an Emmy, and he's won every single award that there can possibly be. He's in Chicago today, not only for the gala that our own Ana Belaval
mm-hmm.
is going to be hosting tonight, or Bill, as you call her. What? Exactly.
That's her name?
Yeah.
That kills me every time.
That's how you're supposed to say her name.
It never gets old, Dean.
The showstopper every time. It is a showstopper every time. He's getting the award here tonight, but doing some interviews today. And we just did the first live broadcast interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda here in Chicago as Hamilton is getting ready to begin performances next Tuesday at the Private Bank Theater. So it was pretty cool.
How about the fact that the producers are setting aside tickets, and what I heard yesterday was $10 tickets, day of tickets. These are impossible to get, but the producer said, we want this show to be more accessible. We want more people to know about it and see it and love it. That's a pretty nice move, isn't it?
Well, one of the things about Hamilton is that it is a show which is bringing people to the theater who have never gone to the theater before. It's a show in which young girls can look at the show and see themselves in important roles in American history. People of color are seeing themselves in important roles in American history. This is an extremely empowering show. It's a pretty steep price tag for tickets generally as well. So as they did in New York, they are also doing day of lottery tickets here, which will mean for every day that there is a performance, they're putting 44 tickets aside for a lottery. You go on their website. It's basically BroadwayInChicago.com. You got to click around a little bit for there, but you'll find the day of lottery site. You register day of, and if you're chosen, you can get tickets to see Hamilton for $10. That said, now the show, when the tickets went on sale a month or so ago, you know, pretty sold out pretty instantly. But that said, they just made the announcement this morning that they're putting another block of tickets on sale that will extend now until September of 2017.
Wow.
And those tickets are going to go on sale next Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock at the Private Bank box office, BroadwayInChicago.com, all the usual places. But another huge block of tickets are about to go on sale starting next Tuesday, which is the same day that preview performances for the show begin as well.
Dean, does Lin-Manuel Miranda have any second thoughts about getting out of this?
No, not a bit. You know, it was time for him to do that. He's super excited about, you know, the Chicago. I said, you know, how do you feel about handing your baby over to a new cast? He goes, baby, this is like a college student going away. You know, this is a, you know, project that's been consuming his life.
They grow up so quickly, don't they, Dean?
They grow up so quickly and go away to Chicago so quickly. So, you know, he's excited about that. You know, called Chicago the best theater town that there is. That's why he's so comfortable with it. Talked about the cast. We talked about we're going to replay the entire interview on my Sunday show this coming week. But he talked about stepping away from the show. He talked about why Chicago is so important to him. What some of the coolest things have been about this amazing ride. You know, some of the pluses and the minuses of becoming an instant celebrity. I mean, he instantly is one of the most recognizable people in America right now.
Sure.
So coming from fairly humble background, it's a pretty big deal. He's here with his dad this morning. His dad is his manager. Couldn't be nicer. Couldn't be, you know, more pleasant. And,
yeah,
you know, just a really wonderful experience. And, you know, he, before Hamilton, before In the Heights, before all the success that he's had, he used to be part of a freestyle act that he would do, where he would get in freestyle rap challenges with people, you know, and they would rap back and forth at each other, basically rap improvisation.
Wow.
So, you know, I asked him if he still had his chops for doing that, and he said he did. And I said, well, you know, because the Cubs are getting ready to go into the playoffs, that doesn't happen very often. Can he do like a Cubs freestyle? And he said that he would if I beatboxed for him.
Why not?
So, you know, I've actually never beatboxed another man before. but I did. I had to step up. You know, I put the challenge out for him to do the freestyle. So
yeah,
I had to beatbox him. So I did. And he was genius and hilarious and really funny doing this Cubs beatbox. I'm sure we're going to have it up on the websites at WGNTV.com, probably WGNRadio.com as well. But if you missed it, we're going to play highlights tomorrow in the morning news.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Bottom line, here is a guy, you know, talk about all the success in the world. Here's somebody who has lived his dream, you know, written a show that was in him, somehow made it come true, somehow made it become, you know, one of the biggest shows ever in theater history, one of the most successful ever in theater history, has won all these awards and is, you know, just couldn't be more down to earth and more nice. It's such a pleasant experience. Couldn't be happier for this young man. And now I have a rap career. Now I can say, like, I'm in hip hop music.
That's
now.
Outstanding.
I don't know about career. Well, you could say you've done it.
Yeah.
But maybe not a rap career.
Yo, don't hate Wendy. Yo.
By the way, Mr. Lin-Manuel Miranda is looking pretty sweet on the cover of GQ this month, too. Mm-hmm. So.
We talked about that. Yeah. We talked about that as well.
Adorable.
Mr. Little Preppy Man, you know, talking about, you know, doing that whole shoot. And I was curious because, you know, he comes from, you know, a pretty normal background of, you know, when you see the GQ magazine and all the different outfits that they had him put on, like a $4,000 suit and
yes.
$800 shoes and all this, you know, crazy stuff that no normal person would ever be able to afford. You know, it's like, did they let you keep it? It's like, hell no. They got it so fast right away.
And Dean, his role, and people always say this is stunt casting, but I don't see it. His role of Hamilton will be played by ABC's meteorologist Jerry Taft. That's an interesting move, right?
Seems odd.
Doesn't it?
It seems
Jerry Lynn
odd.
Taft.
Jerry Lynn Taft. I'm sorry. Jerry Lin-Manuel Taft.
Jerry Lynn Taft, I would have thought, would have gone to Steve Lynn Baskerville.
You would have thought.
Honestly. Yeah. For something like that. You're right. Nobody was more surprised than I was
crazy.
At that kind of stunt casting. Talking about stunt casting, Bill, I mean, you know, being the pop culture head that you are, mm-hmm. We talked about the project that he's going to be starting very soon, flying to London and shooting the sequel to Mary Poppins.
Oh, wow.
He is going to be starring in that with Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
So that's going to be his next project, and we talked a little about that in our interview as well.
All right, and again, it will be replayed there on Channel 9. Go to the website or watch the TV station, and you'll be able to see it. Dean Richards is our guest. We'll find out what movies are coming out and Hollywood's reaction to a big breakup. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Dean's got the beat, or should we say the beatbox?
Yes, he's a rap master.
So proud of you, Dean. Yep.
Yo.
That's right.
Word.
That's what the rappers say,
Sup.
Wendy. That's what the rappers say.
While
Dean,
I was beatboxing with him, I've never felt lighter, by the way.
Is that true? How about that? How about that?
I couldn't have felt lighter if I would have drank a whole gallon of bleach. Seriously.
Dean, did you see the clip? They ambushed George Clooney, and they said to George Clooney, how about this breakup between your friend Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie? And he didn't seem to know about it, and he seemed very disturbed by it. Is most of Hollywood shocked by this breakup or not, would you say?
I think everybody is a little bit shocked. No, really, nobody saw this coming. There have been interviews fairly recently where Brad and Angelina have been, you know, together in interviews, you know, talking about their family, talking about, you know, just acting like a normal married couple, you know, very, very happy and supportive of one another. They both recently starred in the movie that was called
By the Sea.
By the Sea, which unfortunately I picked and a lot of people did as the worst film of last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were together in a lot of interviews talking about that movie, and seemingly everything was okay. They were photographed not long ago in an ice cream store with their kids, you know, having ice cream. Everything seemed fine. So what happened exactly really depends on what unnamed sources you believe, because, you know, nobody really knows except them, which I think is, you know, rightfully so. It's their business. Everybody else is speculating. You know, if I've read one story from, you know, sources close to the couple, mm-hmm. are saying unnamed sources close to the couple, and, you know, all those people seem to have opinions about what's going on. I've read 100 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, really nobody knows what's going on. There were reports this morning that the LAPD and the Department of Children and Family Services in Los Angeles are investigating Brad Pitt for child abuse. There was People Magazine and TMZ this morning quoting sources saying that that Brad Pitt was acting erratic, acting abusive toward his children as they were getting off of a private plane this past Wednesday. So that's being investigated right now. Reports that he was having an affair with the French actress Marianne Cotillard was being reported by the New York Post yesterday. Also yesterday afternoon, Marianne Cotillard herself sent out an Instagram saying that, you know, she's with the man that she loves, her longtime boyfriend. They have a son. They've got another child on the way. That's all the man that she wants. Says that, you know, she wishes them well during this tumultuous time. So she's, you know, essentially saying, it's not me. You know,
right.
I'm not part of this. So,
boy, really, what if her second son comes out to look exactly like Brad Pitt? Wouldn't that be weird?
That would be a little weird.
What if he comes out looking like old Brad Pitt from Benjamin Button and then ages in reverse? Then you know it's his kid, right?
That would be stunning if,
yes.
if that happened.
Yes.
And I wondered if they really, how much parenting they did on their own, because it seems to me that they would have a nanny or five to help with all those kids.
It seems like it when you've got six kids running around. You know,
and you make that much money.
For anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, part of me just wants to say, leave these poor people alone. You know, it's their life. They've chosen to live in the public spotlight, and when it's convenient for them, they do. So I'm not saying it's right, but, you know, I just feel so badly for these kids. You know, the divorce is hard. I think people ought to be a little more respectful that, you know, these kids are going to go through a very, very difficult time right now.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it's fair to them. So
yeah.
What's going on with it? I don't know. Do
all
we
right.
report it every day? Yes, we do.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I don't know.
Dean, give us a movie or two. What do we need to see this weekend?
I would say Magnificent Seven is the one that you're going to want to check out. Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke, Vincent D'Onofrio, Peter Sarsgaard is in it. Good old-fashioned Western. It's PG-13, so it's violent. I mean, there's nothing but shooting and killing people, but it's not super bloody. It's not super gory. It's done with a little bit of restraint. I think it's the chemistry. It's not going to revolutionize anything, but I think it's a pretty well done Western. Really nice chemistry between the seven outlaws. Pretty clever script. You know, really funny at times. So I enjoyed it. I gave that a Dean's List B+. There's also a movie this week called The Queen of Katwe, which is based on a true story about a young girl who lives in the slums of Uganda, who is coached by a soccer coach in this little village. He sees some potential in her. He's teaching the kids to play chess and, you know, trying to kind of direct them in, you know, positive interest because their lives are awful. And this one girl really takes a shine to chess and really shows potential, is able to go to, you know, different championships in other countries. And it's a really nice, uplifting story. Lupita Nyong'o, the Oscar winner from 12 Years a Slave, is in that one. David Oyelowo is in that film as well. I gave that one a Dean's List B. There's a little animated film that came out this week that I don't think is so good. It's called Storks. It's about storks.
Oh.
It's about storks. Storks that instead of delivering children,
babies,
you know, new babies,
yeah.
they deliver packages for an Amazon style company. Just the whole thing seemed stupid to me and didn't seem very funny.
Oh.
Maybe little kids might enjoy it because they pretty much enjoy everything. But I just thought it was a whole lot of nothing. So Dean's List D on that one.
Bad news for storks. Don't you, just getting back for a second to Magnificent Seven, isn't there something great about a good Western? I don't know what it is. I just so look forward to them. They're few and far between, but I love them.
I couldn't agree with you more. Is it because it's so nostalgic and takes us back to, you know, the days of Gunsmoke?
Yeah.
And, you know, Bonanza. You know, some of the great John Wayne movies.
Yeah.
And playing, you know, cowboys like and that. Native Americans.
Yeah.
That's what you have to say now.
Yeah.
That's true. But they, you know, for a while, that's all they were making at the movies, cowboy movies. And then they sort of stopped. And now it seems like about every 5 years or so, we get a really great Western, like 310 to Yuma or Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, I thought was a fantastic one. Some people thought that the Quentin Tarantino movie Django
Unchained
was, yeah. I didn't see that as particularly a great cowboy movie, Western, really, I guess it was. But
yeah.
I saw that in its own, completely different kind of compartment. But this one is, you know, much more in the traditional realm. And it's the story about this town that's being terrorized by a local bad guy, you know, just a horrible villain. And the townspeople hire Denzel Washington, who is, a local gun hand, to try to help get rid of this guy. He hires six other guys, and the seven of them together, work to make their community a whole lot better.
Can't wait to see it. Dean, thanks so much for taking time out of your rap schedule. I know that you're doing a full-time rap job now, and we appreciate this.
I'm going to be performing with Chance the Rapper. just during the break, I got a gig, and Kanye West apparently is holding for me on another line right now. So,
Yay and Dean. Go see them.
Bring back my rap name, Baldy D.
How about D Light?
Love it.
I like D Light.
All right.
That works. That. Thank you, Dean. Have a good weekend.
See you guys. Bye.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. It is. I'm sorry, Steve. We're a little late.
That's okay.
Wintrust Business Lunch.
Tell Dennis Rodkin. He's waiting in the wings.
Nope.
Get him on your bad side.
We'll talk real estate. And about. I did not realize that there are big real estate companies. This just shows what I don't know. That buy up houses and then rent them out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as a multi-unit sort of big company. I didn't know that. Yeah. So we're going to talk to Dennis about a number of houses that are underwater or whatever and now up for rent. Those numbers have been growing. That and a whole bunch more on the Business Lunch today. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. The news is sponsored by Mitsubishi Electric Chicago.com. Here's Kim Gordon.
Kim, thanks. Hi, everyone. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. It's the second half of the Thursday show. How do you reach us? Well, 312-981-7200 is probably going to be your best bet.
Or send us a telegram.
Send us a telegram. Nobody gets telegrams anymore. I'd welcome a telegram.
Hi, Bill and Wendy. Stop.
Stop. You have to say stop in between every couple of words. You want to feel inadequate for just a minute? This will be fun.
Sure, Bill.
Here's a little lesson in feeling inadequate. Yeah. Forbes magazine just released the top 15 earning television actors for this year, for this the 2015 into 2016 television season, which we're in now. Now, there was a time where the same names kept popping up. I know Ted Danson was always way, way, way up at the top of the list. For years, Michael J. Fox was one of the top earners. Charlie Sheen was, I think, number one 5 or 6 years in a row.
Because Two and a Half Men?
Yeah, because of
really?
Two and a Half Men. He would, like, nobody was close to a Charlie Sheen. Even John Cryer, his co-star, was making just a fraction of what Charlie Sheen was making.
He doesn't have a Sheen name.
I guess that's part of it.
That is.
I guess that's part of it.
Boy, that shocks me that he was the top.
So, for years. Like, and it wasn't
even
close. I
never watched that show.
Two and a Half Men?
I saw maybe two episodes.
He was fine on it. I always think that has to do more with having an agent that makes the producers, the agent's job is to go in and say, hey, without Charlie Sheen, you don't have a show, except Charlie Sheen left, and they did have a show for 3 years. So,
Ashton Kutcher came
on? Yeah, he filled in for him.
Those are the times I watched it.
He was also up there by quite a bit. I'm trying to remember who told me this, but Ashton Kutcher came into that show, Two and a Half Men, and immediately made more than John Cryer, who had been there for, at that point, 8 years. like day one.
Yeah,
he's
but
making
Bill,
more.
John Cryer, he was Ducky. Really, other than that,
right?
I mean,
right?
It's not a top name like that.
But wouldn't you feel like if you were John Cryer, wouldn't you be like, oh, I've been here since the beginning, and that
and
guy
I'm
just
glad to
in.
Have a job,
yeah,
which is
I guess.
How I
yeah.
sure he looked at it.
That's true. All right, so let me go through some of these with you. Now, a couple of these names, I have to admit, even though I'm a TV junkie, I don't recognize all the names. Number 15 on the list is Justin Chambers. He makes $9.5 million a year. Do you know who Justin Chambers is?
I don't believe I do.
He's on Grey's Anatomy.
That show's still on?
Oh, yeah. It's been on forever. It's
I thought
still
it
on.
Stopped.
No, but most of the original cast is gone. All the guy, Patrick Dempsey, who was the yeah. star of it for, well, not the star,
McDreamy.
The male star. Yeah, he's gone. And Shelley Long is gone, too. She was Diane on that show. Diane Chambers. But Justin Chambers is number 15. He earns $9.5 million a year. Your friend David Duchovny is on the list. He's tied for 13th.
That surprises me. I mean, he does, what, Californication? Is that still on?
Californication is no longer on, but he did the stint on The X-Files. And then he's also in that show about the guys who caught Charles Manson. So
I don't
he's
know
had
about that show.
I'm trying to. I don't remember what the name of the show is. So he's had in the last 2 years, he's had three fairly decent sized television hits. So that's why he's making $10 million a year. He's tied with an actor named Michael Weatherly, whose work I'm not that familiar with either. I know he was on NCIS. I don't know what if he's still on that.
Aquarius is that the
Aquarius
show?
Okay. is the show. Yeah. Kevin Spacey is way, way up there. He's number 12. He makes $10.5 million a year to play Frank Underwood on House of Cards.
Have you ever watched that?
I saw the first episode, and it's unfair to judge it based on one episode, but I was expecting a lot more. Everyone I know who watches it loves it.
I've never seen it.
The first episode just kind of laid there. And again, it's been on for 4 years, and everybody loves it, so I need to see more of it. But the first episode didn't do anything for me. But I'm going to give that another chance.
You know, it's sad to say, or good to say, that there are so many great shows that you don't have time to add one that
right.
you're not loving.
Right. That's true.
Because there
it?
Are, I mean, for a while, there was a big dry spell in the television world.
Yeah.
But now, there are so many cool shows out
yeah.
there.
And with the ones that Terry and I have not started watching, there's almost like a lineup. Like the new shows are all starting this week and next week. So it's really tough to get into one of the shows. Like, I want to see Game of Thrones so badly. I've never seen a minute of Game of Thrones.
Me neither.
You know?
But the Goldbergs, everyone, and that debuted, I believe, last night, which I didn't watch yet.
I think it did. Eric Stone Street is number 11. He makes $11 million a year.
Don't know him either.
You know him. He's Cam on Modern Family.
Oh, yes, I do know him.
Yeah.
Rumored to be dating someone, wasn't he?
Yeah. who was it?
I don't remember, but it was...
The girl from Skinny Girl Cocktails? Is that who it is?
Yes, which they just didn't seem like they'd be a match. He
yeah.
seems so nice, and I'm not a fan of hers.
Yeah, she's a little hard-edged.
Brittany Frankel, Bethany Frankel.
Bethany Frankel, right, ew. Right. Also from Modern Family, Ed O'Neill is earning $11.5 million a year. For playing Jay Pritchett on Modern Family.
Was he making a ton for Married with Children? Because that show was really good.
I don't think... Now, keep in mind, that was between 15 to 20 years ago, right?
Living in the past.
But, like, the salaries, for the most part, were nowhere near... Some of the names we mentioned earlier were making fairly decent money. Ted Danson, for some reason, always makes incredible money. I'm trying to think of who at the time was making great money. Alan Alda did really well on MASH. There were a few other guys that were through the roof money-wise.
Married with Children, Ed O'Neill made $500,000 an episode, which when you think about it is not a lot of money considering that show was very popular.
Well, they did a standard year for them would have been 20 to 26 episodes.
Oh, I guess
so that's 10 to 13 million a year.
Jeez.
That's really good if that's true. That's really good.
That per Joey Gelman. Thank you, Joey.
Thanks, Joey. Who is also Ed O'Neill's accountant. Did you know that?
That I am.
He has to leave early 2 days a week, and I'm like, where are you going? And he goes, I do Ed O'Neill's accountant.
He was one of the highest paid performers in television at that time for that role.
That's pretty good money.
All right.
You could live on that, $500,000 a week.
I guess when you put it like that, seasons are so short now, and
right.
most of the shows, they're like six episodes for
right.
a season now.
Yeah.
So, wow, that is good money.
He's making good money. If you look, most of the cast of Modern Family... is on the, now they only included men on this list. They do a separate one for women. But Sofia Vergara was number one last year. I assume she'll still be in the top two or three if she's not still number one.
Jay.
You don't seem happy with that. Are you not happy with that move?
She's good on the show.
She is good on the show. Ray Romano is tied for seventh. He makes $12 million a year. Now, keep in mind, this was only for his work on vinyl.
Which
Everybody
has been
Loves Raymond's
canceled.
Been gone forever. But he made $12 million for vinyl, and he was not the lead. He was a supporting player.
No, but he, you know what? He earned his $12 million. He did a great job
good.
On that show.
He was
very
good.
Disappointed that is not around anymore.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll go through the rest. We're still tied for number seven. Number three is the one that's the biggest surprise. Like number one, number two, number five, you can see those. But number three, I don't even think a lot of people will know who this is, but he's the third highest earning actor on television.
That should be part of the criteria. People have to know.
Know
they have
who
to
you
be
are.
A household name.
I like that. All right, a quick break and then more of this. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Is Tim Allen on your list?
Tim Allen did not make the list this time, but there was a time he was always in the top 10. He had some pretty good money years. Forbes magazine just published a list today of your favorite television stars and what they earn. Only men this time. I would have thrown men and women together on this list. I don't know why these are separate lists, but that's the way they've done it for years.
Don't men typically make so much more than women?
Sadly, yes. More times than not, men do. But there's a couple women that kind of get through that. Sofia Vergara, I think, if you went overall, I'm peeking ahead to see what the number one and number two guys make. Nope, she's not even that close. She's not even close. We were tied for number seven. Ray Romano makes $12 million, I told you that, as does Jesse Tyler Ferguson from Modern Family.
Which one's that?
He has red hair.
He's Cam's
Mitchell.
Mitch. Oh, right. I love him.
Yeah, he's very talented. $12 million a year for him. Nathan Fillion on Castle makes $12 million as well.
Wow, and he did not make money for a long time.
Right.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's doing all right now. Ty Burrell, also of Modern Family. So that's four male members of Modern Family. Then you have two female members that are in their top 15. So that's a big budget over there.
Ty Burrell is so funny.
Have you been seeing, he's doing a bunch of commercials now, too,
yeah.
for a couple different companies. Yeah, he's very funny. He's been, it's really funny, most people know him now from Modern Family, but he's been a bit player for years and years and years. I can't tell you how many times I've seen him in movies and TV shows forever, where he just kind of went unnoticed. He's in the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which is a very serious movie. Not that funny. But he's in that. He's in a serious role.
I got to look up what he's been in because I do recall seeing him
Oh,
my God, he was in this? And being shocked.
You know who he reminds me of? I know this is a stretch, but Leslie Nielsen, before he was in all the Airplane movies and shows like that,
yeah.
he was always in serious roles. He's the captain on the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, you're right. He was on Law and Order, The West Wing.
Ty Burrell was.
Yes, Black Hawk Down.
Yeah. All serious roles.
Incredible Hulk.
Oh, was he in that? Yeah.
Yes.
Ty Burrell earns $12.5 million. That's why he's sixth on the list.
Wow.
Mark Harmon from our sports department.
Wow. I find him to be attractive, too.
He makes
and
$20
million.
He's rich.
Wow.
He and I play tennis from time to time, and we're going to start playing for money because he makes $20 million a year, Mark Harmon.
What is Mark Harmon on these days that he's still on that list?
Is he still on NCIS? He was on it.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's still on it. It's the weirdest thing. Every once in a while, you'll see a note, congratulations to NCIS, 40 years on television, and you go, I've never seen it. I bet I'd like it.
I would like it too, but I just, again, it has not become a habit.
Number four on the list, I don't think I'm going to say his name correctly. It's spelled, first name is K-U-N-A-L, last name is spelled N-A-Y-Y-A-R. How would you say that? Canel Nayar?
Sure.
Which is a fragrance from Prince Machiavelli. I'll tell you what though, Wendy, if you're going to get it for Jim, tell him don't overdo it. You just put a little dab behind your ears. Don't put
a
too much Canel Nayar on you because... they will smell you all over town.
What is he in?
He is on Big Bang Theory. He He plays Raj on Big Bang Theory.
I don't watch that either.
He has also written a book called Yes, My Accent is Real.
And he's the highest paid guy on Big Bang Theory?
He is not.
Oh, okay.
He is not. He is, one, two, three, he is the fourth highest paid guy in Big Bang Theory. Because number three is Simon Helberg, who is also on Big Bang Theory.
Who was very good in the Hugh Grant, Meryl Streep movie that was just out.
Oh, is he good
the
in that?
Florence Jenkins or whatever?
Yeah.
It was a sweet movie.
And he's in that.
Yeah,
I saw him in the ads.
He's very good.
He's been in a couple shows over the years, but it's weird that he...
He's like, not that great of an actor in Big Bang,
but... I don't know.
Is that ensemble known for its acting?
It's, yeah... I don't think you have to be a master thespian to be on Big Bang Theory. But again, he's the third highest paid actor on TV right now. He earns $22.5 million a year. I guarantee you if you stopped 10 people at random and said, Simon Helberg, who is that?
Who the Helberg is that?
That's what they would say to that. It sounds like a jeweler. I would say, oh, the jeweler? Is he making good
Helberg.
Money? Is that who that is?
I never watched the show, and my son Dylan started watching it on reruns because Netflix does that to you. Find an old series that you will start watching. It's pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. It is.
I never got into it. Is it still currently on?
Yeah, it's been on for
11
years, 10 or 11 years,
I think. Good golly.
But they're saying this year may be its last. This may be the end. So Simon Helberg, again, is number three on the list at $22.5 million. Now, then you jump up to your number one and number two, Johnny Galecki, who is also on Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
We know him from Roseanne.
Yes, we do.
He was on Roseanne. He makes $24 million a year. That comes to roughly $1 million per episode.
Is he from Oak Park?
He's from somewhere near here. Is it Oak Park? Yeah.
Maybe.
That's not bad money, $1 million a year.
That's pretty great. Yeah, he's from Oak Park.
His co-star, Jim Parsons, also Big Bang Theory, obviously.
What's his name on the show?
I
can't think of it.
Is he Sheldon or is he Leonard?
Yes,
Sheldon. The other one's Leonard.
Okay.
He's Sheldon. You know, they named them after Sheldon Leonard.
When you said that, I'm like, wait a minute.
That's intentional.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
In tribute, for people who don't know, Sheldon Leonard was the producer on Dick Van Dyke's show and many other TV shows. He had a production company called Calvada Productions. I think he did Danny Thomas's show for a while until Danny Thomas became his own producer. But that's in tribute to Sheldon Leonard.
Never knew that.
Yeah. So 20.
You're a wealth of information.
I know a lot of dumb stuff.
Not a
Wendy.
Wealth of money.
No, I don't have
like
the money.
These guys,
who needs the money? I'd rather have dumb facts in my brain than money in my pocket. But I get, you know me, I get $20 a day. I bet there's times you could stop Jim Parsons or Johnny Galecki and they wouldn't have 20 bucks in their pocket. No, that's not true, is it?
They have
2,000 bucks in their pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is...
So there you go. The top four guys on television are all with Big Bang Theory, and one of the women is as well. I don't know how to say Kaylee. Is it Kaylee Cuoco?
Cuoco? Cuoco.
Is that how you say her name? She's, if not number one... No, Sofia Vergara is number one. I think she's number two or number three.
Wow, you keep track of the weirdest things.
I know. I don't know why I remember this, but I do from year to year.
That amount of money is so unimaginable that I don't even think about it.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. So congrats, guys. Don't spend it all in one place because it's impossible to.
There's no place you could spend it all in one place.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and lots of things in the news that have something in common. The Boston Marathon, the shooting of some people at a church in South Carolina, the massacre of innocent people in San Bernardino, the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, most recently the New York bombing, and yes, terrorism, but all these things that have one thing in common, it's a lone wolf. And we are on the line right now with Jeffrey Simon. Hi, Jeffrey. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for having me.
We haven't had time to read your book because we didn't get it in yet. But the book, Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. This is a big problem these days.
Oh, absolutely. You know, for a long time, the focus in the counterterrorism community and policymakers and military was on the organized groups, the large scale groups such as Al-Qaeda in the earlier days, the PLO, and now recently ISIS. But the lone wolf has shown to be very effective. You know, the individual terrorists, they're not part of a group decision-making process, so they can think up any scenario they want and act upon it. They don't have to get approval from higher-ups. And the other thing that distinguishes the individual from the group member is that there's no constraints on their level of violence. You know, the lone wolf, whatever political, religious persuasion they may be, are not concerned with alienating supporters that would be some terrorist groups. They're not concerned with the government crackdown. And also, because they work alone, it's hard for authorities to learn about the plots. No members to arrest, no communications to intercept. And more importantly, in recent times, we've seen a number of mentally unstable or emotionally disturbed lone wolves, yet they're still very effective.
What's their gripe usually, Jeffrey? Is it just with society in general? What do they tend to be so upset about?
It's a whole range. For what I call the idiosyncratic lone wolves, those who really don't have the political religious agenda, they just sort of latch onto something. It is the anger at society. It's the anger for maybe being wronged in their life. But then there are others who could be the true believers. They actually do get persuaded from the calls from ISIS to take action, you know, in their home country. Or in the case of the right-wing neo-Nazi type of lone wolves, they're part of that whole, you know, ideology. So as much as we want to have like one profile or one type of lone wolf, it just isn't the case.
All right. And, you know, we get rumblings when there's ISIS threats going on. But the lone wolf terrorist makes it very difficult to pinpoint when and where. Bill and I were just talking about this the other day. It's so random. You have to live each day like it's your last because you don't know when it's going to surface. What is being done or how can we find these lone wolf people before they strike?
Well, first, I mean, that's a good point in terms of, you know, the fear element, but we can't live our lives that way. That's one of the things the terrorists want. And still, every individual, the chance of being a victim of a terrorist attack is incredibly small. But there are measures that are trying to be taken to try to improve our ability to prevent these kinds of attacks, as difficult as it is. For example, in terms of package bombs being sent through the mail, like the Unabomber used to do, we've had a lot of improvement in detection devices in post offices. Expansion of CCTV surveillance cameras in public settings helps identify lone wolves after an attack, as occurred in New York. But hopefully, as the technology improves, there'll be these preventive measures. You can have real-time CCTV. You see individuals putting a suspicious package in a trash can. You can then perhaps alert the authorities, and something could, you know, be prevented. We're also, you know, the whole thing that the NYPD says, see something, say something, increase public awareness. But trying to find these early warning signs is an ongoing battle.
But now, with See Something, Say Something, this Ahmed Rahami from New York, his father actually called and said there was suspicious behavior and perhaps some connection to terrorist groups. And that was several years before this happened. Was anything done that you're aware of? And what can be done when that phone call comes in?
Yeah, well, in that case, it was followed up. He was interviewed, and the FBI did, you know, some preliminary investigations, but they concluded that basically he wasn't connected with any terrorist group and he wasn't the threat. Now, more information may come out in the coming weeks, and there even may be investigations into what went wrong there. But many times the lone wolf does fly under the radar. In the case of the New York incident, he didn't. So there was something where the father did say something, you know, and call the police. He then recounted and said, basically, you know, he's not a terrorist. I was just saying he was hanging out with the wrong crowd. But he had traveled to Pakistan and Afghanistan. So in his case, there definitely were preliminary early warning signs.
Jeffrey, with your average, and I don't know if there is such a thing as your average lone wolf, but if you're looking at the numbers, do most of them want to stay private and alone, or do they hope to be a part of a larger cell?
Most of them will try to be incognito for a certain point, but what they want to do is sort of boast about what they're going to do. So example is that we think most lone wolves are totally alone, yet they like to talk, and they do their talking on the internet. So most of the lone wolves I've studied have posted Facebook blogs or engaged in internet chat rooms. But the problem is, how do you separate those individuals who are just expressing freedom of speech and maybe having certain, you know, extremist ideology statements from those who are actually going to follow through with an act? Now, some of the lone wolves did want to go over to Syria and Iraq and join ISIS, but others are just taking the call from ISIS to take action in their home country. And I look at it as almost like spam email. ISIS perfected the art of just sending out a message to anyone anywhere saying, take action, whether it's knives, as we've seen in the case of Minnesota, mm-hmm. or in France when you use the truck, or IEDs, as in the case of New York. And you just need a small percentage to take that bait to be effective.
And it lone wolf terrorism, but it turns out that they have others helping them as well. Isn't that usually the case? Like family mm-hmm. members?
Sometimes, not totally. There's what we can call the lone wolf inspired terror. So they're inspired by ISIS. Sometimes we've had, like in the Boston Marathon bombing, two brothers acting alone. So I basically expand the definition of lone wolves and call that a lone wolf attack. The same thing in San Bernardino, a husband and wife team. But when you have family members either turning the blind eye or helping without actually knowing what they're doing, that's sort of a different case. But there have been a few incidents where you had friends and relatives helping the main perpetrators, and then it's becoming sort of a mini type of a cell.
Jeffrey Simon is our guest. His book is called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. When they catch one of these lone wolves, like Rahimi the other day on the East Coast, the first thing they do is they question him to find out if he has any affiliations to any other larger terrorist groups. Are they relieved to find out that he doesn't? How does that play among the FBI, the CIA, anybody questioning him?
Well, probably in the case if there aren't any ties, they're relieved in the sense that it doesn't show it's going to be an ongoing threat from that particular individual. It's also, you know, bad news. It just shows that here we have somebody without any affiliation able to perpetrate an attack. But if there are affiliations, they then try to track everything. Was there any logistical help? Was there any money trading hands? Was there anybody else, you know, involved in this? But basically, for most of these lone wolves, when they're caught, they do not find, you know, an affiliation with an overseas international terrorist group.
Now, in Minnesota, too, last weekend, the stabbing that happened didn't kill anyone. People were injured. After that happened, ISIS claimed responsibility. Why should we believe that? I mean, can ISIS just, I guess they can do whatever they want, but can't they just say, oh, yeah, oh, sure, that was our guy?
Oh, sure. I mean, what they called him a soldier of ISIS. And basically, they're saying he heeded their call of doing anything, you know, anywhere to, you know, advance the cause. So in Minnesota, we had knives, you know, being used. And in that case, there's been no, to my knowledge yet, any communication between Adan, I believe his name was, in Minnesota, and ISIS. So ISIS, though, also, as any group, any terrorist group, they also have to be careful. They don't want to claim credit for everything, because if it turns out they do claim credit and then there was no connection at all and it just was clear the person wasn't even inspired by ISIS, they basically lose face. So what they try to figure out is, okay, he was signaling out non-Muslims in his attack and he shouted something about Allah. So they figured, okay, we can claim, you know, responsibility here for inspiring him through our call over the internet. And that's the other thing we have to realize. The internet's really the game changer. The internet provides individuals with, you know, incredible access to information on targets, tactics, weapons, ability to become radicalized through chat rooms, through, you know, email interchanges and things along those lines. So ISIS has perfected the art of using Twitter, Facebook, and blogs to recruit all these individuals, and recruitment used in a general sense, just having somebody they don't even know about taking action.
It's still strange, though, that ISIS would worry about their image. You know, you think you're ISIS, you're a terrorist group. It's strange that they have PR issues. Strange.
Oh, they totally have PR. I mean, they have, and Al-Qaeda had a PR unit, and they still do.
Yeah.
You know, terrorist organizations are, they're very sophisticated. You know, they're not like the popular image of just some, you know, ragtag group doing violence, but they're concerned with who they're appealing to, and you know, they don't want to be seen as, you know, they were wrong about this claim. So they take some consideration before they make that claim.
So what can be done to kind of police the internet? Nothing at this point, correct?
Well, you know, there's certain you know, we have the freedom of speech, so you're allowed to say something on the internet and blog thing, but at certain points, when you're calling for extremist action, that can raise red flags. And it's a really difficult challenge we're facing. The most difficult thing is identifying what those tipping points are between somebody who's just espousing anti-government sentiments or saying, you know, ISIS is this and I support ISIS, to those who are actually going to follow through with an attack. So there's a lot of work trying to be done on the analytics, on the cyber experts to try to see are there ways to cipher that out. But right now, it's just very difficult. There's just too many potential lone wolves.
Our guest is Jeffrey D. Simon. His book is called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. We'll continue this in just a little bit. If you'd like a question or a comment in, 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are talking terrorism. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Jeffrey D. Simon on the line with us, an independent security and terrorism consultant, visiting lecturer in political science at UCLA, and his new book is called Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat. Now, Jeffrey, when we were talking before, you had said something like you have to try and identify the tipping points for some of these lone wolf terrorists. What do we need to look for?
It's still not certain exactly what these tipping points are. Some of these signs are radical changes in behavior, significant changes in behavior. So a number of lone wolves, after the fact, their friends said, well, they took a trip overseas, and then they came back, and we saw a definite change in the behavior, more extremist views they were saying. Or there are certain experiments with some weapons. You know, in the case of the New York attack, apparently, even on a cell phone image and a video, he was practicing setting off, you know, an incendiary device, and everybody was kind of laughing at that. So those kind of things.
Is that something to laugh at? I understand it was a relative's phone. I mean, at some point, would that be paranoid to call somebody and say, my cousin's acting really weird, he's just blown up phones? I mean, in this day and age, isn't that something that needs to be reported?
Yeah, definitely. But then, you know, it's a dilemma for the family member. You know, in the Unabomber case, the brother actually helped turn in Ted Kaczynski. After the manifesto was posted in the newspaper, the brother recognized Ted Kaczynski's style of thinking. And so, but before he went to the authorities, because, you know, he doesn't want to tell him his brother, he wants to make sure his brother actually is doing these, you know, horrendous package bombs, he had, you know, analysts, private investigators look at the, you know, information, and they said, yes, this is similar. So then he went to the FBI. It's difficult still, you know, for a family member or friend to tell another friend. But in this day and age where we're seeing these things happen, you have to sometimes make that tough call.
Do you think, in your opinion, Jeffrey, that this guy, Ahmed Rahimi, considered what he did last week to be a success? He didn't kill anybody. Everybody knows who he is now. He's been nabbed. He's behind bars. Was that a successful plot carried through by him last weekend?
Oh, I think he thinks it was a success. You know, he got all the publicity now. He got his message out because they found the notebook where he had certain slogans and certain, you know, sympathy for various, you know, the Islamic extremist causes. So in that case, I think he definitely thinks it's a success. He apparently, from the notebooks, wanted to commit some type of a suicide attack or be killed in the process, but then you wonder why he did not. So I think in his own mind, he probably was conflicted in terms of the ultimate goal.
I would imagine a lot of these people are conflicted with,
sure,
you know, what they're thinking and what they're doing.
Right. But, you know, we also have to realize, because there's so much attention on, you know, the Islamic extremist lone wolf, this does cut across the whole political and religious spectrum. You know, we've had right-wing neo-Nazi lone wolves. We had an anti-abortion lone wolf, Eric Rudolph, who set the bomb off at the Atlantic Olympic Games. You know, we've had anti-Islamic lone wolves, such as Breivik in Norway, who massacred more than 70 children. So the lone wolf, you know, can be of any type of affiliation, any type of ideology, and that's what makes it so difficult. And unfortunately, we really can't think that there's going to be some kind of a solution to it. In a way, it's sometimes easier to handle and deal with the organized groups because, you know, you have a structure, or even if they're decentralized, try to intercept their communications, look for chatter on the internet, look for various type of things. But the lone wolf is very, very difficult.
Does today's political climate aggravate the situation a bit?
I don't necessarily think so, because we've had the lone wolves during so-called, you know, off election years, non-politically you know, high-profile periods. You know, the lone wolf has come through every different period in our recent history. So I don't necessarily see, you know, the political climate. It can influence certain individuals, but there's still others who are working oblivious to it.
And as you pointed out, not all these lone wolf terrorists are people from other countries. There are some within our country as well. Just today, an email was sent at my son's high school, and all I saw was hard lockdown. And I freaked out, and then I proceeded to read more, and it was hard lockdown drill, which makes a big difference. But that's what your eyes go to right away. And what is being done at schools and businesses to help protect ourselves from this?
Well, I think every school now, or lots of them, are having, you know, the active shooter training in terms of what the individuals inside, the students, should do, you know, in terms of locking the doors, and then for, you know, the administrators, what their procedures should be. So there's, you know, an awareness of this. But, you know, unless we're going to have all kinds of physical barriers and metal detectors at every school everywhere, you know, we're still going to have that kind of threat. But there's definitely, because of all the incidents, which aren't necessarily terrorism, but, you know, we've had a number of school shootings, because of that, there is a heightened awareness throughout the country on these issues. And for law enforcement, there's a lot of training in responding to these incidents quicker and how to handle it. So improvements are made along those lines. But we still, unfortunately, have risk of those kind of attacks.
Can't wait to read it. Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat, Jeffrey Simon. The book is available at Amazon, your favorite bookstore. Is there a website that we can find out more information on you?
Yes, thank you. www.futureterrorism, FutureTerrorism.com.
And we'd love to keep in touch with you and talk to you again in the future, because unfortunately, I don't think this stuff is going away. And I really appreciate your intelligence about this whole thing. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Have a great day. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's Steve Bertrand. Thanks, Steve. Great job.
Great job, Steve.
Oh, go on.
Great job.
What?
Nothing. Are you finished?
Tremendous job.
Do you guys want to get a room?
No.
You could go for a hug. I know you give out hugs sometimes.
Yep. Not to everybody.
That's what I'm saying. It
very
would mean
selective
something.
On who gets the hugs.
Have you ever hugged Bertrand?
Not yet, but I'm planning something for the end of the year.
I hugged him.
Did you hug Steve?
Before his surgery.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I still remember it fondly.
Like moments before?
No, I wasn't in his room when they were shaving him.
That wasn't you?
That was James Spader.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, if I only had money and connections to James Spader, I would play the biggest pranks
on
you guys.
Oh, that would be funny.
I do look like James Spader without makeup. Yeah, yeah, I know. All right. So I'm looking on Facebook, and I see this picture of a father shopping at Walmart with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can explain it to you, I don't want to put it on our Facebook page because I don't want to promote this, but
right.
If you want to look it up, I found it on Huffington Post, but it's a guy in a Texas Walmart. He's shopping and his young daughter, I don't know exactly how old she is.
She
probably eight.
I was just going to say somewhere between 8 and 10, wouldn't you think? Somewhere in there.
And I don't know what led to this prior to him doing what he did, but he wrapped her hair around the cart handle.
Yeah.
So as he's pushing the cart, her hair is wrapped around it, so she's kind of connected to the cart.
Almost like a leash, almost, out of her own
that
hair.
That hurts, yes.
Yeah, painful leash.
So, the photos of a man who appears to be dragging a little girl by the hair through a Texas Walmart, causing a firestorm on social media. This is on Huffington Post. A lot of people are commenting, but this all happened after a woman, Erica Birch, saw the man in Walmart. She's a 24-year-old mother of four. She said she was shopping in the Cleveland, Texas Walmart, and she noticed a man that had his young child's hair wrapped around the handle of the shopping cart he was pushing.
Yeah.
This is her quote. "I saw this little girl slouched over. Her dad was gripping her hair on the cart while he shopped. She was crying and begging him to stop."
Yeah. Terrible.
to see that would be
right.
horrible.
Right.
Birch said she immediately went over and confronted the man, which I question.
For whose safety? For everybody's safety?
Well, it's kind of, is it her business?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know it's obviously not her child, but you can't just watch a kid suffer, can you? If you saw that, wouldn't you say something? I would.
I would call the police. I really
would. You? Yeah.
I really would, because you approaching that man, and as you'll see, it didn't go very well. The Erica Birch, the 24-year-old Erica Birch said to the guy, hey, you need to let go of her hair. And the guy looked at me and said, no, B-word, you need to mind your own business. And she said, this is my F-word business.
Yeah.
And she proceeded to get her phone out. The angry mom said the man continued to push the cart, dragging the child along with it. And so she was snapping photos of him while another shopper called the Cleveland Police Department.
Good.
When officers arrived on the scene, they took a report from Erica Birch, the woman who reported it.
Mm-hmm.
And later, after officers questioned the man, Birch says a sergeant with the Cleveland Police Department told her that they were unable to arrest him because the child had no visible injuries.
But she's got photographic proof that this happened, and that's child endangerment. I don't know how they could just let him go after that.
Is it?
I think it, don't you think it
is? I think it is, but the cop had seen the photos on my phone, Birch said. I told him, you got to be kidding me. This is abuse, not discipline. After leaving the store, Birch didn't get the results she wanted, so she took to social media. She posted the photos on her Facebook page, and she said, please make this go viral.
Yeah.
And as of yesterday, the post had been shared more than 147,000 times. I'm sure it's way up there now.
Right.
Now, the Cleveland Police Department has made their own Facebook post assuring citizens that they have not washed their hands of this case. Here's what they put.
Mm-hmm.
The Cleveland Police Department has received numerous calls in regards to a child having her hair pulled last night at Cleveland Walmart. We want to assure the community this case is currently being investigated by our detective division. The Cleveland Police Department has been contacted per our policy and is also investigating this case. A joint investigation is currently being conducted by both agencies. Now, the investigators also showed this Erica Birch woman surveillance video that they got from Walmart.
Yeah.
And she says, you could see this man drag this little girl who's only like 5 years old. She appears to
be
a little older.
She looks a little older, yeah.
Regardless,
yeah.
From one end of Walmart all the way to the other, and then Erica Birch went on to say, "What makes it worse is that this child is supposedly autistic, which really be horrific." While a majority of the responses to Birch's Facebook post applauded her intervention, there were a lot of commenters who have sympathized with the child's father, and this is what drives me crazy. This is what somebody posted.
How could anyone justify siding with the father after
this? Because you hear this all the time. If you have a child who has a tantrum in public, which, you know, I have had that happen on occasion when my boys were younger, it sucks. It sucks for the kid. It sucks for you. It's very embarrassing. But you need to do what you need to without giving in every second. But people judge all the time. And they think, oh, if you would just discipline that child, he wouldn't be crying for that toy right now. And this is what somebody wrote. What's wrong with this country is people should mind their own business. One defensive commenter wrote, this kid was being an ass and he held her hair to the cart to keep her from running around. I say, good job. Make your kids mind.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
Another one.
Wow. He applauded the father for
yes,
that.
Yes. If you can approve of this, you're a low life and your parenting skills probably need to be investigated, she said,
yeah,
for some of the responses. When I see something like this, I'm going to speak my mind regardless of what people might think. So I'm throwing it out there, 312-981-7200. I would be very uncomfortable and I probably would call the police, but I don't think confronting someone is the right thing to do. Because people become defensive. People say, it's my kid, I can do what I want. So you let the authorities judge, can they do what they want?
Well,
I don't know.
To a certain point, you can do what you want. But at some point, that does border, if it's not child abuse, it's right on the edge of child abuse to wrap her hair around
I know.
The handle of a shopping cart and walk around. That's child abuse.
But now, would you have said something to the guy?
I would have.
And you would probably be involved in fisticuffs with the guy.
I know that it would be, it could easily be a safety issue between that guy and me, but I couldn't want, there's no way I could just stand idly by and watch a kid suffer like that.
But is it your business to say something? I don't agree with what the man did, okay, in no
right.
way, shape, or form.
Right.
But that's why I would call police. I wouldn't go. Plus, he looked like a big guy. And as you pointed out, you expected unhealthier food in his cart. He had green grapes and bottled water.
Yeah, his choice of food is very unnerving. Because I thought, this guy's just going to load up on sugar. But
Cheetos
no, he's eating healthy. Boy, that's tough.
I just don't think that we have the right to interfere if you see a child getting beaten.
What if
I would call the police.
What if it was a woman who was next to him, maybe his wife or his girlfriend, and he was being abusive to her in some way? You wouldn't step in at all?
I don't feel it's my business. No. I mean, abusive physically or?
Yeah, yeah.
I would call police. I would call the police.
I would just be afraid, especially with this kid. This could be one of those every second counts things. I mean, who knows how long he had already been dragging her by her hair on the cart.
I don't know that she'd die from getting her hair pulled.
She wouldn't die, but I don't know. I would have a very hard time. I know the police could be there in seconds, but I would just feel like I wasn't doing my job if I didn't say or do something.
But what if you had to reprimand your kid, not in that kind of way? What if a kid was crying and you forcibly sat your kid down to say, you know, no, I'm not buying that? What if somebody came up to you and said, don't do that? Wouldn't you be mad? Like, it's none of your business. I know you. You would go, I've got this handled. Thank you.
If it's something that is that obvious that the general public is disturbed enough to say something, I would assume I've gone too far.
But I bet at that point, it doesn't seem like you're a reasonable person for someone to come up and go, sir, take your kid's hair off that thing.
It never happened. I've been very fortunate with our kids. It never came close to happening. But in my head, I always said to myself, if I was ever in a situation, because I'd seen other parents in similar situations, I'd think the first thing I would do is I would take the child out of the store. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't be in a public place. I'd take them outside and explain to them how the situation is not a good one. We need to fix it. But I couldn't, no part of my brain would think the answer to a bad kid in a store is wrapping her hair around
her
cart.
Me neither. This is a text that you, I'm sure, will appreciate. Completely agree with the father. He was not hurting the child. That's not true. She said, it was hurting me. Please stop.
Yeah.
He was disciplining her. When your child misbehaves, they should also be spanked on the spot. It's funny because kids throw this around now. I do believe that parents should discipline their children as they see fit within reason, because now you're not even supposed to spank your kid.
Right.
And it's funny because the kids today go, I'm calling DCFS. And I'm like, okay, here's the number.
Right. Call them up.
Call them. I'll meet them outside with some lemonade.
Right. Let's take some calls and texts on this. We're at 312-981-7200. Who's in the right? Who's in the wrong? What are your thoughts? Give us a call. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Dateline Cleveland, Texas. Photos are on the internet of a man who appears to be dragging a little girl by the hair through a Walmart, causing a firestorm on social media. A 24-year-old mother of four actually approached the man and said, you got to stop that. He said, mind your own business. She then proceeded to post a picture of this on her Facebook page, and it's going viral. She wants it to go viral because this seems like not a good thing to do to your child. Would you intervene? You said yes.
I said I would have. Yeah, I would have had to.
And then I said to you off the air, first of all, this guy doesn't look like a reasonable guy to begin with.
Except for his food choices.
He does have good food
choices.
Lettuce
and grapes are very healthy.
Is that how you would open with him?
Yeah, I would say to him, hey, sir, great food choices. Lettuce is always good, and grapes are tough to beat. The problem I have with you is how you're handling your daughter's situation.
And I told you off the air, this guy could have punched you,
he's
pushed
a big
you.
Man.
And he, look what he's doing to his daughter. So, like, he's going to be reasonable talking to you, and then you guys get in a fight, and then somewhere along the line, you get sued for assault.
Yeah, it's not a foolproof plan. I would feel bad for weeks afterwards just saying, I saw this kid being dragged through a store and I didn't do anything. I'd feel like I'd have to do something. Calling a police is a good backup.
That's what I would do. I would not get involved in this person's business.
Right.
And then...
That's tough.
It is tough. Boy, I don't know where to begin on this. Hi, Tony.
Hi. First of all, I would have called the police. Second of all, I used to work security for a retail store. We had a lady in trying on cocktail dresses one day. Police came in the store. She apparently had left her children in the mall at the treehouse in the mall where I worked for 2.5 to 3 hours, a three-year-old boy and a five-year-old girl by themselves while she was shopping around the mall trying on cocktail dresses. The police approached her. She completely lost her temper. The police took the children into protective custody, turned them over to DCFS. The last I heard, this lady was complaining to the store I used to work for in the police department over the harsh treatment she received.
Because you wronged her.
Right, exactly.
Terrible.
She basically, I think they charge her with child abandonment is what they basically did. So.
Okay, but in both cases, these are not reasonable people that you could deal with on your own. And someone texted and said, if this guy's doing this to her in public, what's he doing at home? Me interfering is not going to help what's happening at home. If I call the police, perhaps they can investigate further.
But these police did come and they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything to the guy. That's alarming.
No, they said that they couldn't do anything, but they're now investigating it. They couldn't do anything because there was no injury to the girl.
Don't you think they're investigating it more, though, because it got internet attention? Like, if this hadn't been on the internet, I think as far as they were concerned, it happened and it was over. I think they're responding because of all the negative publicity they're getting, don't you?
Absolutely.
Why do I believe everybody? I'm so naive and gullible, aren't I? Thank you, Tony.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Tony.
It. I just think their hands were tied. If there's no injury.
But that's a borderline call. That just sound, I mean, even if there's no physical scars from that, that's no way to handle a kid. Tie your hair around.
I 100% agree with you. Hi, Kim. You witnessed something like this?
Hi, yes. Probably about 15 years ago where there was no internet or cell phones. So I was in a grocery store and the mother ran up to a boy, he's probably 6 years old, and just started choking him and screaming at him. And one woman interfered, and she got in her face. And so I interfered also. She kind of started getting kind of crazy with me. So I ran back to a counter and asked the store to call police. Meanwhile, the store manager came out and tried to calm her down and discuss things with her. Police didn't get there in enough time for anything to be done about it. So I followed her out to the parking lot, keeping distance, of course, for safety, and got her license plate number. And I called the police. The police called DCFS. DCFS did contact the family and intervene and actually called me back to thank me because there were issues in the home and those children were being abused and it would have never come to light. Those children would have never been helped if somebody didn't say something in public.
You did a good thing.
I think it's important.
They did such a good thing.
Important, you know, and like you said, Bill, I would have never been able to like stop thinking about those kids if I wouldn't have done something.
Yeah,
I just don't trust anyone now to go up to them and say something to them. I would have just called the police and waited there until the police arrived.
Yeah, and if we would have had cell phones, we probably would have. But those were in the days where you didn't carry a cell phone.
Right.
That's true.
And the store didn't respond as well as I would have liked, though. They were trying to calm her down and just get her out of the store instead of really, you know, bringing someone else out to help. But it all ended up okay as far as I know. But, you know, if you keep distance, if you confront somebody and keep distance and you're not belligerent towards them,
yeah.
I think the way you confront them could make a difference in that child's life.
Absolutely. I agree.
That's
Kim,
true.
You did
Thank
a very
you,
good
Kim.
Thing. Thanks.
It would hard to be nice when you confront this man, though.
It would be
like,
impossible.
You idiot, what are you
right.
doing?
I know.
All right, well, people want to talk about this, but we have to take a break and do some news. You want to continue?
Yeah, stay on hold. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after Steve's news. It's Bill Effen, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. Erica Birch, 24-year-old mother of four, is shopping in Cleveland, Texas Walmart. She sees a man who has wrapped what appears to be his daughter's hair around the handle of the cart and is pushing the cart with her connected to the cart, saying, "No, no, stop that, please." Mm-hmm. Erica approached the guy and said, "Dude, you got to stop that." He said, "Mind your own business." And then she called the police. She took pictures, put it up on social media. And there are people supporting the dad, which I guess you don't know what's brewing in someone else's pot, but it looked like it was hurting the child. I would be afraid to approach that guy. He doesn't seem like a reasonable man. So I would have called the police and kind of stood around there and waited for police to show up and then would offer myself as a witness.
I certainly respect everybody listening, and I certainly respect everybody's opinion, but I have no idea how in the world you could support the dad in this situation. I don't know what this kid could have possibly have done. Seriously, what could this girl have done to have warranted him walking around with her hair spun around the front of the cart? It doesn't make sense to me.
All right. Jim?
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good.
All right. I was in a similar situation. I have a special needs kid, and this was about 3-4 years ago. I was in a store, had a mega meltdown, screaming, cussing, kicking, fighting, running from me. I grabbed her under her armpit, and I had to walk her out, and I had to keep a strong hold of her to get her into the car. And so anyway, so somebody apparently called the police. The police came because I put her in the car and I had to wait for her to calm down before
for the storm to pass. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cops come. They talk to me. They investigate the person or somebody they called apparently was nearby, explained everything. And that part of it worked out. My position is not to be judgmental on this guy, not excusing what he had to do, but here I am, a Caucasian guy with a non-Caucasian child dragging this kicking, screaming, fighting kid out of a store.
It probably looked like kidnapping.
Exactly. So that's why I told the cops I appreciated and the person that somebody called keep my child safe. On the other hand, equally, you know, there's kids out here, you know, mine, thank God, is things are mostly resolved, but they, all of a sudden, there is a tornado surrounding you, and it's not just verbal or disobedience, you know, I mean it, flailing, throwing, hitting, cussing, and the kid had to be removed from that environment. My child did anyway.
Jim, I totally understand that, and there has been a tantrum that I can never go back to that TJ Maxx because they probably have me on security cameras. But as I was dragging a kid out years ago,
Yes. Good.
But no hair wrapped around. I mean, you could tell I was struggling to get this child out of the situation to let the storm pass, and it did. But the wrapping the hair around the shopping cart is not trying to control that kid or, you know, at that point, if the kid's...
He was still shopping.
He didn't stop shopping.
I didn't know that.
Yes. If something's going wrong, you take the kid out of the store. You leave the cart and you go. A lot of us have been there.
Well, I'll throw this out. You cannot drag a kid out by their hair or their wrist or below the, in the medical field, or below the elbow. You will rip hair out. You will fracture joints.
Who would do that?
People that don't know any better, because guess what? If I wasn't in the medical field, nobody told me how to grab my kid that's running and fighting and all that, given her condition, from a tantrum to a safe place. That they just didn't.
So like a bear hug is the best way to do it?
The best way to do it is you put them in you get them in a bear hug, and you sit down and you set them in your lap, and you do like a cross leg over there so they can't kick, and you keep your head away from their head so they don't head bop you and break your jaw.
Good advice. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Best regards, guys. Have a good
day. Take care. You too.
The wrapping the hair around is not helping anyone. And if your kid's misbehaving, even if that kid was like running around grabbing milk containers and pouring it on the ground or doing something in the aisle that she shouldn't have been doing, you know what? You grab the kid, put him in a bear hug if you have to, and you leave the store.
Right. Right. I like to consider myself a fairly creative person. I couldn't even conceive of that Like, the mere thought of doing this, wrapping a child's hair around the handle of a cart, I couldn't have come up with that in 100 years.
All right, let's talk to Scott. Hi, Scott.
Hey, guys. I love you guys.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, but...
You know, nobody knows the whole story about this yet. That's the problem.
Well, the story is a kid's hair should not be wrapped around a shopping cart.
Scott, what could she have done to have warranted that?
I replied to a blog last night and said, you don't know what she did. Maybe she deserved it. Maybe that was the wrong word.
But what could she have done to deserve it?
Yeah, well, not deserve it. I got about 50 replies. Half of them were for the father. Half of them were for...
the child.
Listen, I get that maybe she is a special needs kid, and I get that we don't know the whole story. But again, then take that kid out of the store. Wrapping the hair... You know what? Grab her hand and make her, you know, pull her along with you as she's walking. But wrapping hair around the shopping cart, I don't think there's any reason for that at all, ever.
But did he hurt her?
Yes. You just heard the man before you who's a medical EMT or something and said if you're pulling a kid's hair, that would pull on a kid's hair. His hand was over her hair.
Wrapped around the cart.
Yeah. It's connected to her head.
Of course, but he was walking with her.
But you see you've seen the pictures, right? You can see by the pictures she's not walking upright comfortably. She's kind of bent over because
it's pulling her hair.
Yeah, it's pulling her hair.
Exactly.
That's not comfortable.
Exactly. People discipline their kids all different ways, spanking, which, you know, who knows which is right or which is wrong. You know, a timeout.
A timeout is different. You know, I don't necessarily disagree with spanking on the butt, but hitting a kid in the head, pulling their hair. We're parents. We're not supposed to be hurting them.
You're hitting them and you're hurting them.
You're not supposed to be.
Okay.
You are?
But Scott, just give me one scenario that makes sense of what that girl could have possibly have done to have warranted what her father was doing to her.
Well, I don't know about warranted. I would have followed him and watched him the whole way.
Yeah.
If he would have injured her in any way that I saw,
injuring her. That we're past that. He was injuring her.
But the police said she didn't get injured.
Well, there were no visible scars, which is...
And they're looking into it.
Yeah, they say they're looking into it. So
she wasn't injured. I really do not.
All right.
Well, there are a lot of people that think the way you do. For instance, this texter calling this abuse is reckless. Nobody knows the state of the mind of the child.
I should be pulled around by the hair on my privates.
All right. Well, you can say that for a rainy day, Scott. Thank you very much for calling.
I don't want to see that either, by the way.
Listen. That's why I wouldn't have gotten involved and I would have called the police and let them sort that out.
Right.
To me, it doesn't look like a normal circumstance.
No.
If you see a kid having a tantrum and the parent is trying to get that kid out of the store, I see that a lot. It makes me very uncomfortable. I do kind of look to make sure nothing's going on.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm telling you, there was one time where I was trying to get Dylan out of a store and he was younger, much younger. I had him in a bear hold. I was trying to get him out from underneath a clothes rack. And then as I'm carrying him out of the store, he says, "Help, she's not my mom."
Sure.
I'm like, "Great, Dylan." And I would have taken police questions. I would have, because he was my kid. Kids do the darndest things, I'll admit it. He never did that again.
Yeah.
But you do what you have to do to remove them from the situation. You don't roll their hair around a shopping cart.
I don't think so.
God.
All right. More of your thoughts on this. We've got a couple more minutes, so stay where you are. If you're on hold, we'll get to you next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, and we've been talking about the viral photos of a child being dragged by the hair through Walmart by her father. Cleveland, Texas Police Department are investigating this situation, but they could not make an arrest while called to the scene because the child had no visible injuries. They are looking into it and calling like their version of DCFS.
All right, so even without physical injuries, she had no scars or marks on her body. Just by reviewing the tape of this, they couldn't make a determination that she was being treated unfairly?
Well, she was being treated unfairly. I don't know what the rules are involving that. Mm. I don't know if she was crying because her face is blurred.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all the details on this,
right,
which I think is kind of Karen's point here. Hi, Karen.
Hi. So, yes, Wendy, my point is this. We live in a country where we have a rule of law, and as citizens, we have a responsibility when we see something that we think is against the law or close to it, or in our judgment as non-professionals, we feel requires action to act. Sometimes that action is to get security people nearby. Sometimes it's to shout out to other people around for help. Sometimes it's to go get the police. Sometimes it's to get involved ourselves because we have no choice. But when we do that and we follow up with the authorities, sometimes it doesn't always go the way we think it should go. Now, if we're invested in this as citizens and we think something is wrong, then we need to take time off work, go down to the police station, follow up on it, get the local investigative reporters who have standards that they follow, get other people involved, and try to change it if we don't think it's right. But I think our society's eagerness to do trial by internet is scary, is wrong, and somehow makes people feel like they're doing something and like they're solving a problem. And in many cases, it just diverts people's resources. You said earlier that the police department that's looking into this, now they've got to spend time putting out tweets and telling people, we are looking into this, we are doing our job. I just think people don't understand what their responsibilities as citizens are, and they want to do something that makes them feel good that may actually cause more problems than solving the problem. And it disturbs me that everybody is so willing to try to do trial by internet these days. We have laws. We've gotten away from that. We no longer burn witches at the stake because everybody in the mob said, let's do it.
Karen, I understand your frustration. I get every part of what you said. It all makes sense to me. But if you were in that situation, if you were in that Walmart and you saw this, what would your next move have been?
I have intervened when I have seen people reacting in what I think is an over-the-top way.
Yeah.
And believe me, I've grabbed my son by the ear and said, stop it right now. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it takes something a little extra to get their attention when they're in that fit mode. You know, rationality is not there. But I will get involved. I will ask people if they need help, if they need a moment to calm down. And in one instance, I went and got the store security to get involved. But my point is, we each have to make our decision about getting involved. Some people don't feel safe doing that. They want to do it from a distance. If you want to take a picture with your phone or you want to videotape something and then report it to the authorities, that's okay with me. But then don't try to be judge and jury. It is the authorities' responsibility to do that. They are the ones who uphold the laws in this country. We don't have the right to be judge and jury. We can't be vigilantes. You know, I'm a concealed carry owner, but I can't go around and shoot somebody every time I think they're committing a crime. That would be against the law.
Yeah, thankfully you don't.
Can I give you a horrible scenario, Karen? What if this woman who saw this take place in Walmart read in the paper or saw on the news the next day that a girl who had been in Walmart was killed by her father? She was misbehaving in a store, took her home and killed her. Wouldn't you feel horrible that you could have prevented that just by saying something or doing something?
Bill. How does her posting pictures on the internet prevent it? What she did was go to the authorities. She reported it, and it's now in the hands of the authorities.
So you're not necessarily criticizing this Erica Birch for calling the police, but for posting it up on social media?
Absolutely. Her civic responsibility is to get it into the hands of the people who can do something about it. And she did that.
Kind of agree with you, actually, Karen.
What possessed her then to say, well, I'm not happy with that, so now I'm going to go make myself feel better by telling everybody to make this viral? How does that help that little girl's situation?
I think in this case it helped because those Texas police didn't seem to want to do anything, or they didn't find any evidence of her being abused. And it wasn't until this went viral on the internet that the police in this town said, okay, we're looking into it. Their reaction is because of what happened on the internet.
Well, you're assuming that, Bill. You don't know that. You have no idea what their due process is, what their process that they have to follow is, how many days it takes for them to file the paperwork they need to file and get back there. And you talk to anybody who works in any of the social organizations that deal with home abuse and children and wife abuse, anything like that, it is never a simple process. Children are taken out of homes. They're put back into homes. It is never simple. And we cannot trial by internet all of these people and solve this problem. That's not the way to go. So, Wendy, you're right. I am not upset that this lady got involved. We all need to get involved when we think something is wrong, but we have to get involved according to the laws of our country. And I believe posting things on the internet does nothing. It just tries to make people feel better, and it gets a whole bunch of people riled up, and then they all can say, gee, what a great person I am. I am outraged about this.
I really agree with you, Karen, and I still would have called the police, and I would have stuck around to see what happened when the police did arrive.
And I think it is wrong to make the assumption that these police were not following up on the due process until all this hullabaloo happened on the internet. You don't know that, and I really believe it just pulls their resources away from all the crap they do have to do, to now we got to respond to all these people on the internet before we have a riot on our hands. I just think that that's wrong. That's not the way we do things in this country, and I think it's wrong.
Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. And most of the texts, honestly, it's honestly 50-50 of leave the guy alone, let him raise his kid. Mm. And the other thing, Wendy, you're not a coward for not you're a coward for not approaching him.
Oh, so a little bit of everything.
I mean, it's half the people are supporting the dad.
I'm surprised. I knew there'd be a percentage. I didn't think it'd be that high of a percentage. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have. They're coming in next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Representatives of Roe and Anna are in studio now to tell us what's coming.
Actually, that's often the case with me.
Yeah.
Is that there's a lawyer. I'm here for the defense, sure. For Mr. Khan, representing Mr. Khan. Please approach the bench.
You know Mr. Monaco.
Yes. Now, Mr. Monaco actually has been very busy in Los Angeles on the Derrick Rose case.
Oh, is he involved in that? I didn't know he was involved in that.
I don't know if he is.
Oh, he may or may not be.
It's funny that I mentioned that.
Oh, he's out there working on his tan. Yeah. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, he was part of the team that made that change in the case this week.
Oh, I didn't realize
that.
That's big.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's our own guy. He's, you know, this is the thing. You know, here at WGN, we have only the finest of contacts with things, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the people who are at the very center of the story.
Right.
And that's the key. Tonight, 6 o'clock, you'll be hearing Rahm Emanuel on this radio station, but you'll be hearing him on every television station, too. We will be taking his press conference. It has been pretty much requested of us. The City Hall has made it clear that the mayor is going to speak at 6 o'clock tonight, and we'd love a little bit. We'd love if people could just carry that.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of an address to the city.
Do we know? I'm guessing violence is at the top of this.
Yes, it can be violence, the new police hires, tactics, changes, things like that.
Yeah.
And about where we're going to be. So we're going to.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock tonight.
I will be listening.
Yeah. It's going to be something very, very interesting. I'm going to get that Trump County chairwoman, too, that was in the news yesterday. And have her do a rebuttal.
All right.
Whatever. Oh, that was a beaut. This whole thing's a beaut. Yeah. When do I wake up?
You're not going to wake up.
And
you'd make an excellent nurse, by the way.
Don King ends up being a pretty interesting speechwriter, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. He's telling the stories, and everybody's laughing and all, you know, funny.
Even Trump seemed upset with that. I'm watching Trump during that, like, uh-oh.
I think Trump, you know, someone has given Trump a lithium shot or something. He seems, you know, this whole body double thing about Hillary, it's totally the opposite. Trump's the one with the body double. They've got some other guy. They've got an actor. It looks just like him.
Yeah. When he was speaking in Mexico, he had that presidential way about him and it shocked me. It almost won me over.
And then 15 minutes later when he was actually in Ohio and then making a fool out of himself and how'd he get from Mexico to Ohio so quickly? We couldn't figure it out.
Body double. You're right.
Yeah, he's got the good Trump and the bad Trump. Body double.
Where do you find another tangerine-colored man, though? There's not that
Oompa Loompa.
Oh, yeah.
these are the Oompa Loompas all grown up is basically what they are.
I wondered what happened to them.
Yes, that's what they did.
Yeah, they
ran for president. All right. Well, you kids have a great afternoon.
Have a good show.
Thank you.